It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Boy, what a great panel we have. We've got a priest, we've got a baker, we've got a photographer, and a crank. It's all coming up. This Week in Tech is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 349, recorded April 15th, 2012, Single Entendre. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage using your own computer and printer whenever you need it. You'll never have to go to the post office again. For my special $110 bonus offer, go to Stamps.com today and use the offer code TWiT. And by GoToMyPC.com. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere, right from your phone, with the GoToMyPC app for iPhone. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the offer code TWIT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT4. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. I'm Leo Laporte, and I say that because you're not going to hear another word from me for the next hour and a half. We have such a big panel and such a great panel, starting all the way to the left. Actually, we'll do it all the way to the left, that left. John C. Dvorak. ChannelDvorak.com.
Today I'm celebrating the 400th show of No Agenda.
No Agenda, I saw that. That's great. Of course, I never listened to NoAgendaShow.com.
Of course you don't. No, you've never listened.
I did understand that was your 400th in it.
Yeah.
So that's great.
We're cranking them out.
We've done, this is 349. You're beating us. You lapped us.
It helps when you're doing 2 a week.
Yeah. I should try that.
No.
Really, what do you recommend, 1 or 2 a week? What do you recommend?
For you, you're doing about 40 a week now.
True. I do too many shows as it is. Some people often complain, I can't listen to all your shows. And I have to say, you don't have to. Why would you want to listen to all of them? We make a variety.
You have a lot of Leo super fans that do want to listen to
everything. They want them all.
Well, hey, I'm not going to that thing. There's a guy that's copying you on, I hear him when I'm driving up here, is on 910 KNEW.
That's me.
What?
That's my tech guy show. That's
Holy
me.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And you were complaining to me about repeating my jokes. Trey Ratcliffe is also here, the man from Stuck in Customs who's about to leave us. He's moving to New Zealand, in a week.
But, you know, they have the internet. They just got it.
They have the internet, but they're a day later.
Yeah.
I think the time for things is going to hurt you more than you think.
You think so?
Yes.
I'll just have to plan ahead.
You'll have to be up in the middle of the night.
Why New Zealand? What's going on?
Well, you know, I kind of make my living off this blog. And
StuckInCustoms.com.
I just need a good internet connection. And I'm good to go. I love
mountains. You can't get one in Austin?
You're going to be in the South Island?
South Island.
Oh, that's a good one.
Really?
I think people are either mountain people or forest people or beach.
South Island has got a prehistoric jungle that includes a blue duck, which is unrelated to any duck in the world. It's a prehistoric duck. If you gut him, the insides are completely different.
Well, don't gut him. There won't be any left.
No, there's plenty there.
All right. So did you go for the blue duck?
Yes,
go for the blue duck, stay for the kiwi fruit, I guess. I don't know.
That's their motto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're bringing the whole family? You're moving the whole thing?
Yeah.
Three kids. What's great about Trey is he lives online, so I saw you go to sell your car and the whole thing. I mean,
Selling it all.
Yeah.
Well, no. We have our stuff on a big boat, right? Like in this long container.
Time this so it gets there when you
You'll
do.
Be back.
Yeah. We're like a Chinese exporter.
Heard it here
going
first.
The Panama Canal. It's on the way.
Is it? It's in a container?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyways, Trey's one of the great photographers, very popular, knows everybody, actually brought Thomas Hawk and his wife and Karen Hutton here, so it was some prestigious people, even in the audience today, and he brought the Sony NEX-7, which is a mirrorless camera. John's a big fan of the EP3, and we'll talk a little bit about cameras and
photography. I'm sure this camera looks great.
It really, in fact, we did a review on Before You Buy, and Tony was very impressed. It's a nice camera. APS-C, right? I mean, it's a big sensor.
Yeah. It's a big 24 megapixel,
but
too.
That, it seems like that should be enough for a show to have John and Trey. But look, on my left, Jolie Odell is here from VentureBeat.com. Great to see you.
Lovely to be here again.
And she brought baked goods, which makes endears me to you even
that's
more,
I mean,
if that's possible.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
And last but not least, first time on Twit, a newbie, Padre SJ. You know him in the chat room as Robert Ballister. He's been on TNT, did Forecast last week. It was
absolutely
great.
Yes.
And I'm so glad you could come up and be here, kind of impromptu.
I was actually just going to drop off the pizza. So.
He's got a side job. Yeah. Anyway, thank you all for being here. We're going to have a great show today. We are actually, as soon as the show's over, I'm leaving for Vegas because we're going to do the coverage of the NAB show, the National Association of Broadcasters show, starting on Monday. Actually, you probably saw that Canon had a big announcement. They're going to show us their new 4K 1D.
Yeah, they got two cameras. They're expensive. They're $15,000 and $30,000. They're not cheap.
But and they're aiming them not at still photographers. I think this is kind of interesting. They're aiming them at cinematographers.
Yeah, they're trying to take over the...
What camera is this again?
It's their replacement for the 1D.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
And then there's something, what is it, the C500 they're calling it?
Yeah, C500. And, you know, video is a different beast than photo.
Although they're still, I mean, it's funny, they still have the form factor of a DSLR, but now they've got a viewfinder, they've got accessorized. It's kind of, there you go, they've been influenced by the Red and the Scarlet.
They're trying to take it away from the Red. The Red's a little bit more expensive, the Epic. The Scarlet is about the same price.
Right. So 4K means you can shoot video that is four times higher definition than HD, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's mostly for like movie, film type people. You know,
but at 15K, it's getting closer to something that we might consider. When we bought our cameras, and we have quite a few of them, I think 30 or 40.
You have like a lot of cameras in this place.
We do. Because they're cheaper than camera operators, so we just have lockdown cameras. But these are $1,500 Canon Vixias. They're cheap, consumer grade, because I did not want to invest in anything, because I figured the cameras like this will be affordable in 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah, I think you can hang on to what you have for, you know, another 2 or 3 years.
We'll stay HD.
Pick up this on eBay.
Yeah, we'll be 4K in a few years.
Yeah.
Wow. By the time you get back from New Zealand.
Yeah, which will be any minute.
So let's start. Because the big story, and I apologize for people who listen to all our shows, because this story broke Monday, the day after last week's Twit. So we've gone full, if you listen to all our shows, we've gone through every show now to talk about this story, but we haven't done it yet on Twit. And we need to, and I've got a great panel to talk about it. Instagram selling to Facebook. This company's 15 months old, 12 employees. They are an iOS app, recently released an Android app. Boy, we couldn't have a better panel here to talk about it. We've got one of the great photographers here. $1 billion.
Now, you're not going to preoccupy yourself with the price, with the money that's floating around, because you did that on the show, on the radio.
Hard not to.
But, I mean, you were like...
If it were $999 million, it wouldn't be the same story.
You said the exact same thing.
It's a nice round number.
But don't you think it's a materialistic analysis and we should be looking at the possible reasons that they did this rather than...
Anything with $1 billion in it is materialistic. I don't care what. All right. According to The Verge, Dante Orazio writing, it took Mark Zuckerberg 2 days to make this deal. You think it was a rush to judgment?
No, I don't think he wanted anyone else to start a bidding war. I think they just...
Is that what it was, defensive?
Yeah, no, I can't believe there'd be a bidding
war. New York Times said...
I believe it was defensive, but I don't believe there would be a bidding war.
Not at that price.
This whole story is just so ridiculous. The
company had just been valued at $500 million a couple months ago.
Also ridiculous. It's a picture-sharing mobile app.
It's an app.
That's all it
is. It's not even a website.
It's not anything. Yes, it has a lot of users, but...
But every one of those users, Jolie, doesn't every one of those users probably a Facebook member already? I mean, doesn't Facebook know more about them?
Which gives it away.
No, here's what it is. In the IPO filing documents, everybody was saying, oh, you know, mobile is Facebook's biggest weakness when you're talking about investors in publicly traded Facebook stock. So this is Facebook saying, hey, no, we can do mobile. Look, we bought a big mobile company for $1 billion. Isn't that competent of us? And maybe it is. Sure, I'm not privy to those discussions, but it's so bubbly. I talked to people who lived...
Bubbly in the sense of like a stock bubble. Like
I lived...
overvalued.
I talked with people who went through the 90s dot-com bust, and they said...
You were 12 at the time, so
no,
you probably don't remember it.
Darling, I was working in my first computer
job.
Were
you
already? Yeah, I was. I had my first startup job in 1999.
So you lived through this, actually.
I am older than I look.
Yes.
So no, but everyone who is from that era is saying, okay, this is the kind of deal that makes people terrified that our whole internet economy is going to collapse again.
It's overheated.
Oh, God, it's ridiculous. $1 billion.
No, wait a minute.
For
I think
app.
With the brains at this table, we could figure out why.
I had a good column in MarketWatch about this.
Why did this happen?
Because is this because the number of users, like I think you said on your other show,
30 million,
are all Facebook users already, and
right.
It was they were ripe for the plucking. Google could have grabbed them all and picked up 33 million people right off the top, and Facebook is starting to exhibit the Microsoft paranoia qualities, and I think this is one evidence of it. They are getting just – and Google's showing this too. They're paranoid about the things going on around them because, oh, they're making so much money they can't even consider the possibility that that competition might be good for them. So they did a defensive move, grabbed this thing out of sheer paranoia, and far as I'm concerned, pulled a Yahoo. This is the broadcast.com.
This is broadcast.com, exactly.
It's a broadcast.com.
How long before Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, buys the Portland Trail Blazers and runs onto the court throwing chairs? It's a matter of months.
They have to buy them from Paul Allen, who won't sell them, but they could buy the Seattle team,
see?
Which has moved to, or they could create a new Seattle team because the other team has moved to Oklahoma City.
There you go.
Taking the devil's advocate side, it's really easy to look at this and say, obviously they overpaid. I'm $1 billion for a couple of filters and a few users that Facebook probably already has seems like a lot of money. But this is a particularly vulnerable time for Facebook. They are in IPO land now, and they don't want any competition when the IPO finally hits. They don't want any questions about whether or not they are the number one mobile space.
Well, is it really competition when all of the Instagram photos get pushed to Facebook and Facebook is the one that monetizes those?
It would be if Twitter or Google Plus bought them and flipped that switch there.
But didn't Twitter just buy a photo sharing?
Well, certainly Twitter couldn't afford $1 billion.
They didn't buy TwitPic. Which one did they buy?
I don't know.
Anyhow, Twitter bought one.
Oh, no.
Facebook bought one. I'm going to go buy one. It doesn't even matter. So
according to the Times, Mr. Zuckerberg, that's how you know it's the Times,
Mr. Zuckerberg.
Placed a call on Friday, last Friday, a week ago, to Kevin Systrom, the CEO and founder of Instagram, and a very nice guy. We interviewed him when Instagram came out, and he was still one of us. According to people with knowledge of the matter, who spoke on condition of anonymity because the discussions were private, Mr. Zuckerberg was blunt, they said. If Facebook wanted to buy Instagram over the next 48 hours, Facebook and Instagram hammered out the details for a $1 billion cash and stock deal. Well, I can imagine that call. Hi, Kevin. It's Mark. Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg, yeah. Hey, I want to buy you. And Kevin thinks, I don't want to sell. Sure, Mark. It'll be $1 billion. Okay, where do I send the check? you can't turn down $1 billion.
Maybe you thought you said $1 million.
$1 million. I think that's what happened. I think Kevin said, yeah, sure, $1 billion. And Mark said, he didn't blink. Yeah, sure.
Well, here's a vector.
Could have gone for 1.5.
Here's something that no one's really talking about. And I think something's happening right in front of us, right underneath us, and no one really understands it. But I think the way humans are starting to communicate with each other is evolving.
It's going to visual, isn't it?
It's becoming a picture-sharing society.
I think you're
right. For years, ever since Gutenberg, right, at the printing press, we've been converting concepts into words and paragraphs, and that's how we've communicated. In fact, that's how we've communicated on the web forever. But if things continue at their current rate and we're sharing more and more photos, you can communicate concepts and stories and ideas with photos almost as effectively as words. It's not better or worse than words. It's just different.
It's faster. It's easier.
And it's more mobile friendly. And I think that's
very
hugely
much
important.
So.
Hugely
yeah.
important, yeah.
In fact, as you say that, Trey, I think about my use. I use Path and Instagram. Yeah. And I most often will send a picture and maybe a few words.
And look, most everybody now, if you have a streaming type life, right, you just flip through the words until you see a picture that's interesting, and then you might read some words around it.
Right.
Instagram is a pure photo sharing thing. And if you think about, like, humans, as we develop, basically from age 3 till 10, you're learning this alphanumeric system and how to convert concepts into cogent sentences. That is a huge amount of human development time. But what if people just start sharing photos, to share stories of their life, to share concepts?
Actually, Pinterest exploits this thought.
In fact,
it's like going backwards a little bit to cuneiform, if you ask.
You got to think Pinterest is probably next on the block, right? How much is Pinterest worth if this is worth $1 billion? This is the popular page right now on Instagram. These are the pictures that most people like.
This depresses me. Makes me sad for humanity.
They're not deep.
It's pictures of food and shoes and weirdos.
Yeah.
Like, who is that?
Well, there's a marriage proposal. That's a great thing to do. Do it on Instagram, sure.
Well, who is he talking to? Yeah,
maybe all of you.
And there's no question that language continually evolves. We're always changing the way that we're trying to convey meaning. But, you know, getting back to the main story, I don't see
that.
Thank you, Padre.
Getting back on the rails, I don't, even granted that communication is shifting, I don't see the value in a purchase like this. Defensive, is it an ACK hire? Were they looking at a core technology? Is there a patent portfolio? The answer to all those questions is no.
I think Jolie hit the nail on the head. The stock, the IPO's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Mark might have said, if we lose this, it could cost us $1 billion in the IPO. It might be worth it.
It's almost like they just spun a roulette wheel and said, okay, Instagram, they're big right now. So, I mean, give it up for Kevin, the luckiest guy in America.
$400
million.
There we go again.
He gets $400 million out of that.
Although I found the timing really weird because I think they collected a significant round of funding, like something like a day or two before.
And somebody bought in a week before this happened.
How do you not know
Happy
that?
People.
That's a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Happy people. They won the lottery.
That's probably inside information.
But with your due diligence, how do you not know?
I don't think so. This happened in 2 days.
I agree with John. How do you not know that the company you're investing in is getting acquired by Facebook?
Maybe,
I don't buy it. Yeah. I think somebody knew something.
Well, I think we can take the opposite angle on what she just said, which is not that it was to make Facebook look good to the potential investors and save $1 billion. But now I think potential investors look at it and say, well, these guys are kind of crazy. This is a dumb idea. This is a stupid thing to do.
Could hurt them.
And I'll tell you, I think this is going on with these guys are going to do a bunch of non-voting stock IPOs. Google's pulling the stunt,
which is completely ridiculous. That's getting people very upset. In fact, they say that's even the most evil thing. Given all the evil things Google's done this year, that's the most evil. We're going to talk about
that. These retirement funds are going to pull out of Google. You watch.
CalPERS and things like that. And these are big investors, these institutional investors that can make a huge difference in the valuation.
Did Berkshire Hathaway just get into Google? Or was that IBM or something else? I think it was Google.
I'm so
Let
into
me
Google.
Google that.
You know, there is another angle in the story, and that is back when the IPO story was fresh, there was a TNT episode called 57% Zuck. And the whole idea was,
he owns most of it.
It's Zuck. If you're investing in Facebook, you're actually investing in Zuckerberg.
Well, and
no decision can be made without him. So, I mean, does Zuckerberg just have a liking for Instagram?
That's kind of what the Times article said.
I like this product, so I'm buying it.
I got a bunch of cash. Why not?
I got the checkbook.
Don't you think if they can put those stupid filters on Facebook as a Facebook feature, wouldn't it make Facebook photo sharing even more popular?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they don't need Instagram to do that.
It makes it easier.
You mentioned the other day there's dozens of
Camera
Instagram
Plus
clones
did
right
it
now.
Beforehand. Mm-hmm. You've got how many filters in your 100 cameras in one?
There's 100, Leo.
It's an amazing thing. So it's not like Instagram has a monopoly.
Coincidence that you named it that.
I know. We racked our brains trying to come up with a number.
You know who missed out on this and probably came very close? Hipstamatic, which predates Instagram.
Oh,
in fact,
I have a little theory about why that happened. I think the fact that Instagram was willing to go into Android territory made a huge, huge difference in that price, especially.
It happened 2 weeks before the sale.
Yeah, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, I was at Facebook HQ, and I was talking to them, and they're like, yeah, iPhone's a big deal. Android is as big a deal, and the mobile web is twice as big. Facebook said this to me. They showed us the numbers. And they also said, you know, we see the entire spectrum of mobile access technologies as one and the same. They're all kind of equal.
So that kind of lends credence to the idea that maybe Instagram knew about this ahead of time, and maybe Instagram said, quick, get an Android app,
Far
quick.
Be it from me to come here and posit conspiracy theories. That's John's job.
No, that's John's job. Because they put this off. I mean, I asked Instagram. Every time I saw them, Android app, Android, they say, we're working on it, we're working on it, we're working on it.
The big question for me is, if they could pay $1 billion for Instagram, why couldn't they throw $100 million at Kodak?
Just to keep
just
alive.
Just a bone. Come on.
Just a bone.
Actually, Kodak, I was looking at their enterprise value. You'd have to pay $750 million Kodak you own straight up. Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's kind of speaking of the
which
valuations.
Which would be more interesting. And they have all half these. Yeah.
They have filters. They're made out of glass, but they have. I thought it was kind of interesting that Instagram is actually worth more than the New York Times. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, the whole thing is ludicrous.
It's bizarre. Yeah, anyway, we're going to take a break. We've got a great panel. We've got Padre S.J. here. We've got Jolie O'Dell here. We've got Trey Ratcliffe here. We've got John C. Dvorak. It's a cage match. And I'm going to tag out here because I've got to talk about stamps.com. So, John, if you want to go baste your meter.
What are you talking about? You're always saying, you give me nothing but grief. For leaving because this is a chance to take a break.
It's an opportunity. I'm saying smoke them if you got them. Just, you know.
Well, I don't have them. The smoking light is on. I'm not smoking anything.
All right.
I'm staying here now.
It's all kinds of wrong.
In every way possible.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you how you can avoid going to the post office. Do you go to the post office?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
No, you don't. You shouldn't.
Why?
Did you know you can print postage from your computer? With printer?
Yeah, I know that, and I can do that too, but the post office is a great social event.
Oh, God, no. Please.
Oh, yeah, it's a fantastic
heaven
place.
Help us.
Nice people there.
They're actually closing 2 out of the 3 post offices in Petaluma. I imagine the same in
Why would you need 3 post offices in a little town like this?
That's a good point. Maybe that's why they're closing them. I don't know. No, we have a big mail sorting facility, and then we have the big post office.
This is a no-agenda topic we talk about all the time. This is a screw job. The post office – no, seriously, the post office was set up to make them pay 10 years in advance of all the retirement benefits, breaking the bank and making it look as though the post office is going out of business when it is not.
Debt.
It's making serious money.
Is it?
This is all part of a scheme to get rid of the post office, which is in the Constitution, to make Federal Express and UPS take over the whole business so we'd be paying a fortune to send a simple letter. This is a scam.
You know what's not a scam? Stamps.com.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Padre. Yeah.
But it requires the post office to exist.
It actually does. It's interesting. Now, this might confirm what you're saying because the post office loves stamps.com because you don't go into the post office. They give stamps.com customers discounts you can't get at the post office. This may confirm what you're saying. 21%, as much as 21% on express mail, 15% on priority mail. If you use stamps.com, you know, so what you have a scale, they give you a USB scale, you put the letter on there, prints out the postage. If it's international, it'll fill out the forms. If you know, it does all the forms you need for priority or express or whatever. And then the mail carrier comes to you and takes it. You don't even have to, like, bring it to the post office.
Well, you can always do that.
No, you can't.
You can put a stamp on something and the post guy.
I beg to differ.
My post guy takes my mail.
Not if it's over 13 ounces. You have to go to the post office.
Okay.
It's because post 9/11. I know because I was mailing media mail.
But I'm not normally sending out 1 pound packages.
Well, don't you mail your books ever? Oh, that's right. Your books are getting thinner. Mine were heavy. Anyway, seriously, 13. But not with stamps.com. The indicia on there, it's fine. The mail carrier will take it. You can even schedule free pickups. Now, okay, that's it. That's what's great about stamps.com. But look at this. If you go to stamps.com, now there's an $80 trial offer. Do not click that button. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. We're going to turn that $80 offer into a $110 offer. What's the problem? What's going
on? She's signaling about something.
Did you lose your dog?
No, it's on the Never mind.
Oh, she wants her cover girl.
Thank you.
Oh, that.
You. That wasn't
sorry.
So easy.
That's
or
not
breezy,
a purse.
You know what? All you have to do is say, hand me my makeup, please, and I'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. I didn't
I'm here for you, Jolie.
You were on such a roll.
No, that's quite all right.
I want to know more about postage. Tell me more.
There you go. You know, what a lead-in.
This is the first time Stamps.com has advertised on this show. Now you know why.
Well, they're going to end up loving it because she's getting, I want to know more about postage from her, and it's going to go on. This is going 5 minutes so far.
This is going viral. $110 offer. Now, wait a minute. Listen, $55 free postage.
What?
Yes.
Well, that's a good deal.
I'm telling you. And you get the digital scale for free, and you get a $5 supply kit, and a 4-week trial. All you do is you pay shipping and handling for the scale. That is a very good offer. I want you to visit stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT. You got to get that extra special, extra postage on that. Click the microphone and use the offer code TWIT. print your own. You don't need special ink.
There's a picture of you on their website.
Wait a minute.
Only when you enter in Twit.
You look mighty sassy, too.
Yeah, that's okay. Sassy. That's an old picture. I was sassy back then. That's before I learned about the ways of the world. Stamps.com. Use the offer code Twit. Thank you very much. I think it was from the screensavers, that picture. It's an old picture. My hair is a lot whiter now than it was, mostly because of John. It basically turned my hair white.
Good.
Apparently, Twitter tried to buy Instagram. Did you hear that? That's from the Next Web.
Did you believe that?
You don't believe it?
Girl, no.
Girl, lie.
I don't believe
lying. According to sources familiar with the deal,
look, my Jack sources Dorsey, say Twitter doesn't make nearly enough money.
They don't have the money.
They don't have the revenue. They don't have the need. They just bought another. I need to look this up because I sound like I'm talking out of school, but they really did just buy another picture sharing service. And, you know.
Well, I could tell you it's not as well known as Instagram because nobody can remember its name. Dorsey was an investor in Instagram. Get this. In February, Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, no longer CEO, he joined Chris Sacca, Baseline Ventures, and Benchmark Capital in a $7 million Series A round, which is probably worth, I'm guessing, $70 million or more. 10X.
He's fine. He's buying.
The values all seem so arbitrary.
It's kind of, doesn't
when you get numbers like $1 billion.
It doesn't make any, it's like, it's, it
and
is,
after
it's
these
fiction.
Guys make all this money, then they try to screw the shareholders with like what this Google deal's all about. Yeah. You know, it's unbelievable to me. Why are you buying a share in a stock when you don't even, what are you just kind of loaning them the money? Or you just, is this like a kind of a an affirmation that they're a good company so you buy their stock and you have no voting rights? You don't really have a piece of the company at all?
All right, so what's the deal?
What
so Google,
this?
So tell me what's going on, because I've seen this story, but I don't understand it. And you seem to know
it's
about
not,
money.
I don't know why he's enraged. It's not that bad, really.
Have you ever seen him?
Well.
He's always like
some people.
No, I'm not always. Only when there's an outrageous situation.
A lot of people feel that this is evil.
Stock splits like this happen all the time. Google,
this is a stock split, and they're changing the basic type of stock. It's non-voting now.
Yeah.
So you don't really have a piece of the company when you buy the stock. So what's the point?
If you buy Class C, but Class A and B shares are still going to be publicly traded as well.
According to the prestigious Washington Post, watchdogs are concerned.
Watchdogs are always concerned. That's why they call them that. Someone's always going to be concerned, but honestly, I don't know. After looking at the way Google structured their very first, you know, stock when they went public, and the way Sergey and Larry and a bunch of early shareholders managed to hold on to a lot
of
voting
power. That's what they want
to
do. They want to keep their power.
Class A stock has 10 times as many votes as Class B, correct?
This is a Zuck thing.
This is
same
a
thing with
Zuck.
Zuck
did
the same thing.
Damn thing. And oh, I swore.
But don't you let me think about this though. If I'm investing in Google, don't you want to make sure that
the founders
continue to have power?
Some people don't care. You know, that's what they said in the investors call when they announced the stock split. Mr. Page said, you know, when you are buying Google stock, you are saying that you trust us and you have confidence in us.
You're investing in them.
Right. And so if you want to invest in them, you buy Class C. If you want to invest in Google as a controlling shareholder with votes, you buy Class A or
Class
B.
So you can buy Class A stock still.
That's what the man said.
Is it the same price?
I doubt it.
Well, when they do the stock split, I do believe that it will be the same price and it'll go from $6.50 a share to $3.25 a share for all kinds of Google stock.
Right.
I could be lying.
Why do companies split their stock in the first place? I mean, what's the advantage of
that? Well, for one thing, it's easier to, you have more kind of flexibility when it's trading at a lower price to do all kinds of different things. And also it jacks the price up usually. Now, not when you pull a stunt like this necessarily. This stock went down on the announcement.
So investors are going to, if you have a share of Google.
Yeah, number two.
You will now have two shares of Google.
And
instead
so
of it being valued at, say, $600. The two shares will be 300 each.
Yes, but they tend to ratchet up because there's always a magnetic attraction to the old
price. The market likes it when,
Well, the market likes it because people who can't afford to invest in stock at $6.50, they can sometimes afford to invest in stock at $3.25, and they know it's going to climb back up slowly over the next couple of years.
And that's kind of John's saying. There's this kind of pull towards the old price.
Yeah, always.
And you always see that they split. And
well,
it kind of
you've done this. You go to the a lot of people do this. You go and look at some stock you'd owned years ago, and you say, "Wow, how does this price?
Right?
Why is this thing $5?"
Right.
And then you realize it's been split 10-1, but you normally think that. You're always thinking the old price. It's a scam.
So these by selling stock, in previous years, Page and Brin, the founders of Google, have actually lost votes to these new stockholders. So this new structure basically doesn't dilute them any further.
They're set up so they don't get diluted, even when they give stock to employees now.
Right.
Normally, you start to dilute the company.
I do that. If I were going to give you stock, I would not give you voting stock. Oh. I would give you a non-voting piece of paper.
Yeah, useless. Thanks.
Well, if you only care about money and you don't care about power, non-voting stock is fine.
You participate in the success of the stock.
Right, without having to think about it.
How many times have you signed
Americans
a proxy ballot and said, go ahead, vote with the directors
say? I usually just let it slide.
I don't even sign the ballot. I just let it slide. Yeah.
In some cases, doesn't non-voting stock grant higher returns?
You'd think, wouldn't you?
A little extra.
Yeah, no. I've never seen it.
It's always the same?
I've never seen it. Maybe it does happen. If they, sweeten the pie, they could do it by giving non-voting stock a big dividend and not giving voting stock any dividend. But the people that are voting are going to vote that in. They're going to vote the dividend to themselves. That's the problem.
Mm. Oh, he makes a good point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she makes a good bun.
I probably should explain at this juncture that Jolie has
brought us
baked goods.
I like the way he said it the
baked
first
goods.
Time.
Baked goods.
And you call them pain de fruits.
Pain au fruit.
With a little cream cheese frosting that's quite good.
Cream cheese and cinnamon.
I encourage you all to sample Jolie's buns if you have the opportunity. I'm speaking, of course.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
She gives you a glare. She has an evil eye. You have to be careful with her.
Speaking, of course, to the people in
muffins.
Studio.
Muffins. There you go. You're going to get muffins.
You can't make anything.
Can I try your muffins?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Leo can for sure.
If Pope Benedict is watching, watch the starting of the episode,
he's
just
not
so
here.
Understand that.
He's not.
Does
the Pope?
That.
We have a priest in the audience.
Do you think
God's
the Pope
sake.
Watches podcasts?
Well, we installed a video conferencing system for Pope Benedict, so I know.
I saw that he was like Skyping or something.
Well, he's on Twitter. Isn't he the first Pope?
Who does he Skype?
Someone's
though?
On Twitter.
Does he like Skype cardinals and other?
He Skypes cardinals.
Yeah. You have to probably be a cardinal to get a Skype from the Pope.
It's hard to reach through the screen. No, bad. Bad.
Can you kiss his ring? Can he put his...
No, I mean, you're getting off the track
absolutely
here.
You can kiss his ring.
What is the protocol? I mean, because it is... Normally, if you meet him in person, you would kiss his ring.
If you ever met him in person, there would be three people standing next to you telling you exactly what to
right.
do.
Right. Same thing with the queen.
Same thing, right?
Yeah. But Skype changes that. You don't...
I think you kiss the keyboard.
I think you're joking now. I think the father is
Leo does
me.
That anyway.
No, only when I'm drunk and my nose just lands on the G key. So let's get Trey in the conversation.
Yeah, he's bored stiff.
Actually, I really liked what you said about the idea that we're going visual. And that the value of Instagram may really be that people are speaking in pictures more. Does that not change everything? I mean, is it because of TV? Is it because... Why would we move from the written word to images?
Oh, it's because we're moving from a world of web pages to a world of streams.
Ah.
Because, early adopters, now this is going to the mass market, really your daily life is filled with what is new. Now, you don't go to... It takes a lot of effort, actually, to type in a website and go over
there.
It's
a lot of work.
Right? It's very simple to hang out on Instagram
right.
or Google
and watch
Plus
the pictures as they kind of float by.
Yeah, and you just see this stuff come at you. And we are, we're visual creatures, right? We understand environments. We walk around a 3D world and understand horizons and people and objects. And
it is how we're built.
It makes natural sense to our brain. We love seeing new things.
From an evolutionary viewpoint, letters and writing are very new.
In fact, we're meant to walk around as humans, and we don't. We just sit here. But seeing pictures come at
makes
you gives
think
you the illusion of walking around. So
I will back that up because when we've been doing audio podcasts forever, and really most of our audience still downloads audio. Mm. But I felt intense pressure to do video. Mm. People don't pay attention if you're not doing video. I mean, still people get the audio, but I think and there are a few of our shows that are higher video downloads. iPad Today, which is more visual. There's a couple of three. I can't remember what the other ones are, but they tend to be the more visual shows where you want to look at it before you buy, I think, is mostly video. Even though the truth is we don't have the time to watch video. I mean, that really is much more time-consuming than listening in the
casually.
Car. Yeah. So I actually worry a little bit. But on the other hand, people don't take you seriously if you're audio only. You have to have that video element.
Well, whatever your passion is, chances are that your passion, whether it's knitting or...
You
want to
see it
or whatever. You want to see it rather than hear about it.
Well, there are some kinds of intelligence, like mine in particular. I cannot absorb information from audio. I can't listen to podcasts. I have to
you
see.
You can't. Well, you're a video. You're a visual learner.
I must be. Yeah. I learn by reading.
See,
and
I can.
Learn by
I
watching.
Listen. I can learn by listening. Some people have to learn by seeing, or some people have to learn by touching, by doing. Yeah.
And so maybe there's just more people out there who are visual learners and they dig photos more than they dig text and
well,
more
not
than
just,
they dig audio.
Not just photos, but also videos. There's this point, right, when you go to a party, a collection of people, there's a point at a party where everyone
by the way,
gets...
you won't be doing that anymore in New Zealand, I can assure you.
Oh, come on. They party on the island.
Just saying. Just to make
they party down on the island.
Yeah, they do.
Party lots down of... on the island?
There's lots of sheep. Bah.
There's lots of sheep.
In, I've been learning to say, learning, though, I'm just helping to get this
go
sheep
ahead, Padres,
try to
come on. Get us back on track.
The more senses that you can engage... the easier it is for people to learn material. So reading is one way. Listening is another one. If you found out a way to do smell, smell is actually an incredibly powerful sense. But when we start talking about different ways of communicating, they are really kind of cyclical. You get one that people haven't seen for a while, so they'll be really excited about, and then it will start to wane, and it will go back to something else.
Because we like the new.
We do like the new.
Yeah.
We do like the new. And right now, there's a little wrinkle on still photography that has created a big boom again. And then it'll switch over to visual, and I'm hoping it switches back to audio.
I kind of like that. I kind of like that. You're hoping? Why?
Well, because there is something
sermons.
Different about listening.
Sermons.
Well, sermons.
Yes, too. That. But when I was teaching, I would always have my students listen to a broadcast and watch a broadcast. I'd split the class down the middle. And it was amazing the differences that they would get from
absolutely.
The communication.
How interesting.
Yeah, that makes nothing
did
but sense.
Did you do that as an experiment, or did you then flip them and have them do it the other way as well?
I would always flip
it was
back
a,
and
so
forth.
So it was a way of teaching.
Right. And the perfect example of that is... The first real use of television in a presidential debate between Kennedy and Nixon.
Yeah.
The people who listened to it
right.
only
classic.
Thought Nixon won.
Classic.
The people who watched it knew Kennedy won.
Right. Mm. Because of how Nixon looked, because he was sweaty right. at a 5 o'clock
all
shadow.
The nonverbal stuff was right. getting across strongly.
But that would argue for Trey's point of view, because they got, in a sense, they got more from they heard and saw, and there was more information in the visual, right?
Right.
Well,
or misinformation. In
yeah,
the
I think she might be right there.
Can't believe everything you see.
But I don't
you
want
don't
a
believe
sweaty
your lying
president
eyes.
With a 5 o'clock shadow. I mean, that's what people are saying.
Yeah, you do. You want the sweaty, hardworking 5 o'clock shadow
well,
president?
But that's what people were saying, and so that additional information helped them.
And Kennedy,
even if that was a mistake, it helped them make the decision.
Kennedy had people on his staff who had experimented with TV before,
yeah,
and
they
so
knew.
They knew about lighting,
well,
they knew about camera
makeup.
Angles.
Well, they also had
yeah,
a
had
cute
makeup,
candidate,
yeah.
and frankly, that's a lot of it, right? If you have a cute candidate.
Yeah, Nixon looked like a sleazeball.
Right.
But audio only is going away. Not going away, but it's maybe flatlining. Because the reason that we had audio only was mainly a bandwidth concern. And now... it's
well,
so easy to have. You look at YouTube video increases, right? These are just going up dramatically month after month after month.
Okay, I'll argue with you on that because I think that those numbers on YouTube are starts. They don't measure how much of the video is watched. I think there are a lot of starts. I think there's a lot of repeat starts. I think the evidence is pretty clear that those numbers are highly inflated on YouTube. So I wouldn't say judge it by that. And I got to tell you, most people don't have time to sit down and watch. They have a lot more time.
Well, do they have stats? They may have stats as to actual minutes viewed.
They don't release those.
A lot of videos are so short.
Yeah, because the Coney thing would be busted.
For good reason, exactly. Yeah.
Coney.
There was a Stanford study not too long ago that talked about brain waves while listening and watching particular content. And what they found is that when you have someone who has a really good radio voice, and I'm not going to point to anyone at the table.
Right there. That man sitting in the middle.
But listening to
and
that
actually,
voice.
And actually, Jolie's got a great
yes,
radio.
She has a
voice.
Wonderful voice.
Oh,
but
shucks.
The brain tends to
shucks.
Synchronize a bit only more with a voice heard, a melodic voice.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's not necessarily what they're saying, it's how they're saying it. You don't get that same sort of synchronization when people are watching something. It's a different part of the brain that's engaged.
Do you have to look like Magnum P.I. or something? I mean, is there like a look that does the
you
same
have
thing?
To, the funny thing is it's not
beautiful?
Necessarily beautiful. You have to look
interesting.
Different. Interesting.
Yeah. That's why a lot of movie stars are kind of have quirky, like big heads or big noses or some sort of quirk
right, right.
that grabs your eye. Interesting. Wow. When we come back, let's talk about the Apple lawsuit. The DOJ is investigating and has filed a lawsuit against Apple over price fixing in e-books. We thought there'd be a settlement right away. You wrote an article talking about this, Jolie. I would love to get your...
analysts thought there would be a settlement.
Yeah, we thought... Last week we were talking about this. We said they're supposed to settle on Monday. Nothing happened. Mm-hmm. So what is the story? We'll talk about it in just a bit. Great panel here. And nothing more to say about that. You're just great. You're all of you great, wonderful people.
You're working that voice again, I see.
Yes, I am. You're getting sleepy.
The chat room is zoning out.
You're getting sleepy.
Don't say
I shouldn't
that.
Do that. I don't want people to fall asleep. You're getting awake. Look, there goes Jolie. She's running away. Quick, catch her. This. So what you're saying is like I'm the Marilyn Monroe of radio. Is that what you're saying?
You know, there's a guy at KNEW that sounds like
just like me. And isn't he soothing and soporific? Oh, actually, a lot of people call say, my kids go to sleep.
So you have the laugh in the voice, which is the big money.
Jolly. Yeah.
That's the big money.
I'm the happy man.
And that's where you get, that's where the bucks come
it's
from.
It's fake.
I can't do it.
I'm actually miserable.
That's why I never
No,
did
you
radio.
Have the cranky sound in your voice.
Yeah, but there's no money in that.
No, I agree.
You know, so
but that's why they like us together. It's like salt and pepper.
Yeah, maybe. A little bit.
Push it.
A little bit. A little
Push
bit.
It real good. This show brought to you by the good folks at Citrix, makers of Go to My PC. You are getting sleepy, and that's why you're going to visit Go to My PC. I've never tried this. I could just forget selling features and benefits. Just go to the website, gotomypc.com. You see that orange try it free button? Click that. Now use the offer code TWIT. Thank you, and good night. No, you feel refreshed. You wake up thinking life is much better. I should just try that. Yeah. All this time I've been talking about like how great Go to My PC is, and it lets you access your computer anywhere you go from another computer. You log in, and you can run any program, send and receive email, access any network resource. You can do it on an iPhone now. Look, she's getting her email via Go to My PC. You could do it from an iPad. It's amazing. And it's great, and it's fast, and it's effective. It's secure, 128. I say things like 128-bit SSL. That just puts people to sleep. I should just say, visit gotomypc.com. Click the orange try it free button. Use the offer code TWIT. Suddenly life seems so much better. You feel refreshed. You're losing weight. My, you're good looking.
People
Have
like
you been
you.
Working out lately? People do like you. What am I thinking? I should have done ads like this all along. No, we like to sell features and benefits because we know you're a smart group. Go to mypc.com, click the try it free button, offer code TWIT. And it's amazing because Robert, Jolie, and John have fallen asleep and they're under the table now. They're relaxed. They're refreshed. When they wake up, they're going to feel much better.
I don't like John being down there.
I'm afraid he'll steal my shoes. I don't know. I just have that feeling. So how's everything going? So you got the Sony NEX with you.
Yeah.
This is a whole new class. In fact, you wrote the article on your site, stuckincustoms.com, Trey Ratcliffe, saying that perhaps mirrorless cameras like this would be replacing those big, heavy DSLRs we've all been using.
I don't say perhaps. I say it's
this is
inevitable
the future? Really?
Future that DSLRs, for most people, will go away.
They're too big. They're too bulky.
They're big. And the reason that DSLRs are so big is not because they're awesome. It's because they have to have room for that old DaVinci-like mechanical mirror to flip up and down, which is, if you think about it, it's 2012.
I'll tell you what
else do we have that moves physically?
I'll tell you my argument against these mirrorless cameras. Mm-hmm. The thing I like about DSLRs, the thing the mirror allows, is that when I look through the viewfinder, I'm looking through the lens. The mirror allows me to do that. On these, you have to use what's called a video tap. You're actually looking at a video of what you're looking at.
Aha, but here's
that
where you're
sucks.
Wrong, Leo.
What?
Uh-oh. When you
I don't
put
have
your
to look...
eye up to this thing, right?
Yeah, the viewfinder.
You get a full blackout. It is an electronic view, but you get this HUD overlay. It's like Luke Skywalker's binoculars.
Yeah, but I'm not seeing the... It's a disconnection from what I'm looking at. I'm not seeing the image. I'm seeing a video of the image. And it's a low-res video, right? It's not a very good... Let me look.
No, it's incredibly high-res.
Oh,
this is. This is the NEX-7. This is
They've
new.
Gotten better.
This is the best EVF ever made.
Yeah, but it's still an EVF.
You know what you want is something with a pellicle mirror. Remember those things?
Now, this feels like an OLED screen, actually. It looks pretty good.
It's an amazing screen. It's super crisp.
I think there is a camera, a digital camera with a pellicle mirror.
What's a pellicle?
That's like there used to be. Canon invented this years ago. They used to have it on their old SLRs. It was called the Pella something or other.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lens that has a bunch of like prisms in the mirror, and the mirror actually sends out two images, one to the viewfinder and one to the. So essentially,
it doesn't have to move the mirror.
Doesn't have to move.
Palex has a point. He says, me not liking a video tap is like the pilot's not liking the fly-by-wire airplanes. I want my hands on the yoke, and I want the rudder to move.
I don't have a problem with this.
You don't mind it?
No.
This one looks much better, say, than the Olympus did.
The Olympus doesn't have a viewfinder.
Oh, actually, you're right. It wasn't the Olympus. It was a Fuji that I had. It was another Micro Four Thirds. Is this Micro Four Thirds?
No.
This is APS-C, so it's a bigger sensor.
Yeah.
You have to use Sony lenses, or is there a standard?
It's Sony. Yeah.
You got to use Sony lenses, but they're going to
baloney.
They're going to have 14 lenses by the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
And all expensive, overpriced.
Yes. Did you see they're firing 10,000 people?
Sony?
Yeah, they're restructuring.
Sony is... we should talk about Sony.
Let's talk about Sony. They're firing 10,000 people because they're pursuing a new strategy, the One Sony strategy. This is like George Bush's, what did he call it? The New World Order? The One Sony.
I had a good column in Market Watch about Sony. Yeah. I write a lot of columns. And this one, that thing's...
Did I just take 40?
About 40. You got to be careful with that thing.
That was a burst.
I said that Sony should split the company up into three or four divisions and make them separate companies. Hey, do you mind?
This is actually very useful.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he saying something?
How much is it?
Hey, you know, it's like, why don't you...
Does Sony make this?
Yeah.
I like that shot. That's a good shot. John putting up his hand saying, no pictures.
No pictures.
Huh. And the image quality is good.
Yes.
All right.
You know, John has a column in Market Watch.
Yeah, yes. I did. And it said that they should split the company up.
Well, we've talked about this before. I think we talked about it last time we talked about Sony. This is what you always said about Microsoft. They should have different divisions.
I said this with a lot.
So it should be a consumer division?
I think there should be a professional division, which should have the medical stuff and all the high-end cameras, the stuff for pros, the broadcast equipment. Then they should have a game entertainment division, which would include the movie company and maybe the PS4 or whatever. And then they should have a consumer division. That would be a nice way to do it.
10,000 people is a lot of people. Is that worldwide?
And apparently you're not interested.
And you've already separated out Sony Entertainment, right?
They should sell Sony that
division. Just get that division out of
there. That's what's ruined them.
It's what's ruined them.
They went to Hollywood. They couldn't do their MP3 player because, it would interfere with our record industry.
If you want to be a consumer electronics company, you cannot have a vested interest in the content of Hollywood.
Otherwise, you get the mini disc and A-track.
Exactly. And the magic, what is that, chewing gum memory?
That's right, the memory stick.
The memory stick.
That's what happened to Sony. And mini discs. You mentioned A-Track,
Is there a different philosophy of just business between the Japanese big tech companies and the American big tech companies? They don't seem to do things like American tech companies.
That's because they're Japanese.
Well.
Sony did invent Blu-ray, though. We got to give Sony credit for Blu-ray, right?
Panasonic's the ones who really pushed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But Sony invented it.
I don't think. I think it was a joint venture with about five companies.
Maybe it was. All right. But I remember it was Sony going to Comdex, or maybe it was CES, but seeing, they were talking about the blue laser. They were very excited about that. And this was years ago.
Back to this Japanese.
Back to the Japanese
like to have a broad range of products as opposed to focus. Like Apple is the epitome of a focused company.
And the Japanese,
and they're the biggest.
The Japanese want keretsu. They want these conglomerates.
Yeah.
The Korean companies do the same thing. I mean, Samsung makes bulldozers.
Right. But one thing none of them do is none of them have an architecture that is open for consumers or developers to make
things. That's where we're number one.
They don't like to.
We're number one.
Because people, they see everything as a parasite.
Right.
Yeah.
It's closed, and we're open.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to make games for the PS3. It's much easier to do it for the Xbox.
Right.
It's no Nikon, Canon, Sony, none of them have opened this up for developers.
Look at Kinect hacking versus PlayStation hacking. Yeah. Sony came down like a hammer on people, for hacking the PlayStation. And then Microsoft came along strategically the next week or so and was like, oh, we'd love it if you could hack on our Kinect.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Ooh, that's goofy.
So let's talk about Apple and the e-books, because, we tried to talk about this all week, and I'm so glad you're here, Jolie, because I don't understand it. Actually, John, too, because John's always been interested in this whole relationship of publishers, the agency model versus...
No, it's all just a racket.
So what is the agency model?
It is a racket.
Isn't that what this is all about?
It's a racket, and...
In fact, that's what Apple says, we're doing you a favor, we're breaking Amazon's monopoly.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, but they should be doing us a favor by lowering the prices and breaking the monopoly.
It is anti-competitive to say you are not allowed to sell your product anywhere else for a lower price than the one that I get. That's anti-competitive. That's like the very definition of anti-competitive business behavior. It's ridiculous to me that anyone thought they could get away with this And it's ridiculous to me that they structured the iTunes bookstore in this way.
Okay, that side I understand, but it seems to me as a consumer, you know, Amazon sets the price on a book and tells the publisher it's going to be $9.99 or nothing, or we won't sell it, and that's it. Apple says you set the price, whatever price you want, we'll take 30%, you take 70%. That seems to me, I'm sorry, but as a, it seems more fair.
Yeah, but it's unfair because it's price fixing.
Mm-hmm. And no, the publisher set the price.
They're using, yeah, but then they're
Apple
all
Apple says that, okay, that's the price everywhere, right. Not just for
Apple
here.
Apple says you cannot let Amazon sell it lower than we do. Mm-hmm.
This well, that makes sense. If you're going to set the price, set it everywhere.
Well,
otherwise,
actually,
nobody's going to buy
it. You shouldn't be able to.
No, the Apple thing was not about Amazon at all. It was actually, in other words, if I get the book. And the publisher says we want to sell that at $14.95, which is the typical price. And then one of the members of the consortium, which makes this an illegal scam, one of the members says, "Well, you know, we want to do it for $12.95." Then Apple says, "We're doing $12.95. We're all doing $12.95." Okay, well, so I'm going to do $14.95.
That's collusion.
That's collusion. That's price fixing.
Okay.
I get that.
That,
and that's what they're doing, and that's what they said they were
Apple
doing.
Apple just said, "Let's go to the agency model," and didn't do that though. Amazon would just undercut them.
Amazon's always going to undercut them. But no, here's the problem.
That's good those for books, but aren't so good for a writer or a publisher.
No, those books are not going to Amazon. That's the point. The publishers say, "Look, okay, here's the deal. We got a little group of people. You guys get to sell the book. Amazon, you're out of this one. You can go sell the books from these other guys."
Yeah, because Amazon wants to set the price
at $9.95.
Unilaterally, they want to say this is what that book costs, regardless of what the publisher spent,
that's
regardless of what it costs
illegal.
To make it.
Because they can't, they're cutting Amazon out of the deal.
No, but
let's start back up a mile.
Okay,
you tell me what is it that you're visualizing that makes it sound kosher? I mean, how are you seeing this?
Apple says to the publisher, you know, if I make a widget,
okay, I'm going to
and
be a
I want to sell the widget at Orchard Supply
I'm
Hardware.
A publisher.
Wait a minute, let's do it with widgets.
Micro econ right now. Go for it.
I know
widgets.
You've been to college and I haven't, but
I'm very fancy.
Tell me if this is wrong. So. I make a widget. I make this mug, and I'm going to sell it at a hardware store. It seems to me that if I could set the price and tell the hardware store it's 99 cents, you get 30 cents, 33 cents, I get 66.
You can't do that, by the way.
I know you can't, but let's say that seems fair. Then the hardware store says, okay, but since you said 99 cents, don't go across the street and sell it for 80 cents because nobody's going to buy it from me.
I don't know. It's a weird analogy.
It really should be.
I don't know what you're talking about, Leo.
I don't know.
I'm trying to make sense because I don't think anybody understands this really.
Now, Leo,
yes,
father,
explain to me, Robert.
You had a group of people who were making these mugs.
Yes.
Not just you.
Not just me.
And you met with all of them and you said, we're going to do this as a single entity.
But that's not Apple's fault. That's the publisher's fault.
This is the last dying gap.
Publishers are freaked out. If you go to New York and hang out with any of these guys who are in the business, they are all freaked out about Amazon because they don't want Amazon telling them how to do their business.
Now,
and it screws them up, by the way, when it comes to royalties.
In your article in VentureBeat, you say that actually there may be precedent that gives Apple the upper hand here.
Yeah, there may be.
What is the precedent that would make it okay for Apple?
Let's see. What did
you have to read your article.
Yes, I do.
Hey, welcome to
the
club.
DOJ
see, that's
has,
why I write it down, so I don't have to remember.
And this is actually what I was saying. The DOJ has a better case against the publishers because they colluded. They're the ones who said, okay, we're going to get together in a room and we're going to set a price for a book, than Apple. There's 1982 precedents, DOJ against IBM.
I'm sure there are precedents on both sides, and I'm sure a lot of lovely lawyers are going to be working very hard on this case.
A professor of law at the University of Hartford said if the CEOs of the various publishers did, in fact, get together in hotel rooms to discuss prices, they're sunk.
Okay, without question, I think all the precedents say that the publishers, the CEOs of the publishing companies, if they colluded, then they're going to get smacked for
that. Well, in which case, Apple wins. So what's wrong with what Apple's doing?
There's not really a precedent for this kind of price fixing in digital goods, not at the scale,
that's interesting.
Not with these kinds of people. So
that's
we're
different because it's digital,
new territory. Yeah, well, you don't have, you really can't set a cost that's different from a retail price because there is no cost. It's a digital good, so it gets really weird and really hinky, in my opinion.
I don't think
antitrust law is designed to protect us, the consumers.
Yes.
So. In the best of all possible worlds, there's competition for price. The price will naturally go down because of the competition. The problem is there's only one person who publishes John's book.
It's simple.
So there's no competition. I'm going to buy it.
It's called price fixing.
Okay, I got it. It's illegal.
And they were doing it. And the thing is yeah, they came up with this gimmick. We got to remember the gimmick. This agency thing is a gimmick. It's like, whoa, we're just going to be, we're not going to be really selling the product.
Why is that a gimmick?
We're going to be the agents of the big booksellers.
That's how they do apps. An app maker sets the price. What's wrong with that? And then Apple.
The difference is that there's no publisher with apps, and they're actually, I think that all publishers are on a trajectory for their own death anyway. They're unnecessary middlemen.
Why do we need a
John
publisher?
John should be setting his own price directly with Apple
and, will be
and with
soon.
Amazon.
Oh, right.
So should John Grisham
design his book and copy it?
Well, you
hire
no, you hire
no.
You can
hire somebody.
You can freelance that.
You pay out of pocket to, as a writer who has published books and who's also worked at book publishers. There's a lot of machinery that goes on within a publishing company, and I think they'll be afloat even if all they do is ebooks. They will be afloat because you need the machine.
You can do it.
You need the machine.
You can do it.
Do it yourself. Plus, you get 70%.
I'm amazing.
Wouldn't you rather?
Not everybody could.
Well, see, there's an interesting tech wrinkle here, and that is antitrust law was never designed to defend against this particular type of price fixing. You've got publishers who have a material good, the books, and they don't want the e-books to undercut it. Now, you've got this situation where the consumer can get the exact same thing from a good that costs virtually nothing to manufacture. Yeah. And so the publishers are scrambling to find out, how do we keep this virtual thing from undercutting?
They have to change the business model.
What the publishing industry's numbers were, ebooks are doing so, so well, and they really do cost nothing to produce. I think the publishing industry's attitude is a little bit more like, okay, here's a money train. How can we get on it?
It's a ripoff for the authors, because I understand I make 15% off my paper book. The publisher is not taking 85%. The guy that delivers the truck, the book binding, they all make pennies, right? It's like the death of a thousand cuts. But with the ebook, my ebook costs just as much, and I only get 15% of that.
That's not right.
Of a lower number.
Well, then you
That's
should
not
talk
right.
to yeah. look at your contract, man.
Maybe
we
right.
writers need to be more clever here's, about negotiating contracts. So if
here's
ebooks,
well,
like
I do
50,
just
50,
ebooks
people
now.
Sign the dummy e-books. Contract
the
too
dummy
often.
Contract.
We've talked
yeah.
about the dummy.
Bring that up, yes.
Wow.
What is
about? I always bring it up.
Apple's statement. The Department of Justice's accusations of collusion against Apple simply not true. I wouldn't disagree with what they say here. The launch of the iBook store in 2010 fostered innovation and competition, breaking Amazon's monopolistic grip on the publishing industry. Since then, customers, and this is the key, it's got to benefit us, have benefited from ebooks that are more interactive and engaging. Just as we have allowed developers to set prices on the App Store, publishers set prices on the iBook Store. I don't understand what's wrong with that.
I kind of want to call bullcrap on that. I think innovation in ebook publishing was doing just fine before Apple got into doing an online
bookstore. Oh, but I know,
store.
But it's gotten better. It has. But that's more because of
I
the
think
hardware.
It's gotten better because of the devices, the
that's
hardware,
of the, devices.
The interactivity that you have on a phone or any kind of tablet, any kind of computer. That's why, it wasn't Amazon controlling ebooks. And developers having Apple to work with hasn't made everyone's life magically better. No one's getting an amazingly good deal because Apple got into the ebook game and broke the Amazon monopoly, which is the stupidest accusation.
I must be missing something, because it just seems like this is how we do it with apps. Okay, let's get publishers out of the mix.
Well, no, that's the problem. You can't do that.
They will get out of the
You keep
eventually.
Trying. Every one of your analogies moves the publishers out of the discussion.
Right. Well, that's
well,
where
because
that's
this
what
is
we're
about
headed.
Them.
Characters. They're the ones.
They're
who
the ones who are the bad actors. They are doing all this nasty stuff.
So Apple's not, but the publishers are.
Everybody is.
Apple's just like the mean little kid who kind of talked them into this idea.
You know what?
But in the long run, they're disintermediating. They're going to allow people like Trey to say, "I'm going to set my price. I know I'm going to get 70% of this price. I'm going to set a fair price. I'm happy."
Yep, that's the future of all
What's
publishing.
Wrong
it's
with
directly
this?
From the
if,
author
if he doesn't
to the consumer.
Go through a publisher. Right.
Why would I go through
so
a publisher?
So let's get rid of the publishers.
Exactly.
The only reason people go through publishers often is to get in advance.
So why sue Apple? Let's sue the publishers
because Apple's part of a conspiracy.
To do what?
To defraud the public out of $5.
This is the SOPA and PIPA of the publishing industry.
Really?
This is an industry that's trying to protect a business model that must fail.
Right.
And now we're
But is Apple helping that? No, Apple's really setting it up
well,
in the long run.
Apple enabled it.
Yeah, Apple's the guys that came in with the idea. Hey, I got
if
a great idea.
If you follow the money, Apple wins
agents.
And publishers wins and consumers lose when this kind of thing happens.
Until publishers go away, which you're going to, and then we're
no,
all...
No, they're really you, not going you, to go. Did the record labels go away when MP3s came around? No, they're doing absolutely
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, I think the
publishers
will not go away, but they do have to adjust their business model. And usually they adjust by trying to screw the consumer, which is what we're seeing here, and that you're defending for some unknown. Well, that's because you got so much money, you don't care. You buy everything.
No. I look at ebook prices. They're cheap. I buy stuff on the Kindle. It's $7. It's $8 for a book that was $25 in the bookstore. How am I getting screwed?
Because they want to cut that out of the picture.
Because it costs them zero to make it.
Who cares? It's costing me less money.
No, they don't want
you. How am I getting screwed? It's $8.
Because they don't want you to pay $8. They want you to pay $14 for the same thing. That's how you're getting screwed. You're not getting.
It's still cheaper than the $25.
Oh, so you don't care if everything goes up twice as much money?
But I don't care. If a price goes down, how is a customer getting screwed?
The $7 book that you're buying right now for $7 goes to $14 because of this collusion. You're fine with that? When you could have bought it at $7, if
it won't go to $14 because the publishers go away. Trey Ratcliffe sells to me direct, and he's only going to charge 99 cents.
Now you're just blue skying the whole argument. No, it doesn't count.
It's the future.
Okay, I'm done. I'm through.
All right, let's take a break. I love this. It's a cage match. Coming up, we're going to talk about a big fine for Google, $25,000.
Oh,
how are they going to pay that?
That's one gasoline. Sergey can find that in one year. Engine on a 767.
God, Larry's just talk about going to the poorhouse. But first, a word from Squarespace. Please now, if you will, open your browsers to squarespace.com. Give them all your money. Thank you. Actually, this one, it doesn't work. It doesn't work because if you go to squarespace.com, the very first thing I want you to do costs absolutely nothing, and that's to try Squarespace free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. You don't need our custom offer code or anything. You just click this green button. So you've got a website in mind. It could be a blog, but it could be any a photography portfolio, anything. All you need, first name, last name, your email, your name for the site, and a password. That's it. For 2 weeks, you get to use everything at Squarespace. It's the best hosting, never goes down. It's the best software, makes it easy to design, and they've really added something. They've got 2 new templates, 13 redesigns, 85 new style options. They've got iPhone, iPad, and Android apps that are really fantastic for updating your blog or moderating comments or looking at stats. And did I say stats? What great stats they have. You'll know everything about what visitors do when they visit your site so that you can encourage, you know, the right kind of content, that the content that they're wanting. And by the way, this is cool too. You can edit your text in HTML, text style, markdown, or plain text using their WYSIWYG editor. They've got a live view post editor, shows you exactly what that post is going to look like. If you're doing CSS, they have a special CSS editor that colors the code and everything. You get your full site preview, so you know there's never a surprise about what it's going to look like. 300 Google fonts, which, by the way, adds a very nice touch to making a site very professional. Look at the examples at squarespace.com. You'll see every Squarespace site is unique, has a personality of its own, looks just like Robert. It's an amazing thing. No. For some reason, they took a picture of you. Threw me a little bit, but Let's go to Hawaii. What do you say?
Sweet.
Sweet. Actually, this is Auckland. This is Mauna Kau. This is in New Zealand.
Auckland.
Hmm. Auckland, baby.
The capital.
All over the world, people are making great.
Land of the Hobbits.
Land of the Hobbits.
Wellington is the capital, actually.
You guys are the worst. You don't know anything, do you?
You don't know anything.
This is Dr. Wild's site. It's a Squarespace site because it never goes down, right? I mean, that's what's really cool about this.
No, we slammed it the other day.
We can slam these sites and never go down.
NoAgendaShow.com and pounded it. Nothing came up.
This is my new exercise regimen. I'm going to sit on a box and stick my feet in the air. That's, we call it Pilates. That's what I'm
but
doing.
The Pilates?
Yeah, no, Pilates. Is that how you say it? No, that's Italian. Anyway, squarespace.com. After you look at all this, after you try it for 2 weeks, perhaps you're going to want to get a site. Now, this is when we come in. The new pricing is very simple, $8 a month when you buy a year, $16 a month for the unlimited when you buy a year, or you can get it by month to month. But I would suggest getting the year because we're going to get you 10% off whatever your first purchase is. 10% off with the offer code TWIT and the number 4. TWIT 4, one word. Offer code is TWIT 4 for 10% off either your first year, your first month, whatever. Squarespace.com. The secret behind exceptional websites, perhaps even yours. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. TechStop, thetechstop.net is your site, Robert.
That's me.
What is it?
You know, it started off as just a blog for a weary priest who liked technology. And it sort of has become...
I think that's a good name, the blog for the weary priest.
The weary priest, the weary priest. And I do so much tech work, I wanted to create something that was apart from the religious stuff that I normally do. And that became the TechStop.
How fun. So are you... Are you a priest? Like, do you have a congregation, or do you are you? What do you do?
I'm a.
What do you
Why
do?
Why are you here?
There are millions of people asking just that same.
What
question.
The hell do you At do, Robert? Point, actually, no. They probably don't ask it like that.
No. So I'm actually a Jesuit priest. So I belong to a religious order. It's
right.
not the same as, like, say, belonging to a diocese. My order does mostly education. So, for example, in the United States, we've got 28 colleges and universities, including like Georgetown, Boston College, Fordham, Santa Clara.
A lot of educators.
A lot of educators.
Yep.
And then about 65 high schools. Right now, I'm working at our national office in Washington, D.C. So we're sort of the guys who help coordinate between all the different organizations that we have. But before this, I was working as an associate pastor in Hawaii. That's where I lived there with
Got
Brian
it.
Chi.
Love it.
And down in San Jose. So, yeah, my order, we kind of do everything. We a little bit of...
But you do some IT stuff, too.
Yeah, I work with an organization called United Business Media, which puts on several shows and conferences. One of them is called Interop, which is the
largest. Oh, I know Interop, yeah.
So I'm one of the lead engineers. In fact, so is Brian. In fact, that's where we are right now. We're down in Brisbane putting a network together, a super huge network that will be an enterprise-class network supporting all the attendees to the show. We're going to build it, tear it down, put it into trucks, bring it over to Vegas, rebuild it.
Wow.
And then tear it down again and bring it back.
So you set up in San Jose the Interop network ahead of time and then bring it to Vegas.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a very expensive Lego set.
And fun, too.
And fun. Yeah.
Well, so nice to have you, Robert. Thank you for being here. Jolie O'Dell is at VentureBeat.com.
That's
correct. I have to be careful because you moved.
I did.
VentureBeat.com, and it's going well there.
So well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
I'll
nice
have a
to
year
have
there this summer.
It's been a year?
Almost.
Wow,
been a
went
year.
Fast. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great to have you. Mr. Trey Ratcliffe, StuckInCustoms.com is your website. That's not going anywhere, even though you're going to New Zealand.
Yes, it will stay there, the daily.
You're not
going
to change the name
day.
To Stuck in New Zealand? No.
He's got his review. Actually, it'll be going up soon, right?
Yeah.
For the NEX 7.
It's inchoate, but there.
Yeah. You were just in China. This is neat. And you do a daily photo. One of the things that Trey does that's really made him kind of a leader in social media for photographers is you started doing a picture a day on the blog. Then you started doing it on Facebook. Now you do it on Google+.
Yeah.
And that's really special. This is the bird's nest in China. Where the Olympics were. What
do
a beautiful shot.
Do you do the same
shot.
Photo of the day everywhere?
No. It's actually very complex. I put different things in different places, and we have different streams, and I try to interact as much as I can, and people ask for help, and I give it when I have time. And it's
I don't know how you find time. And you're going to keep doing Trey's Variety Hour, I hope.
Yes. In fact, tomorrow night, it's every Monday night on your network.
Yeah.
At 7 p.m. Pacific. And tomorrow... we're doing the Sony NEX7. We're going to talk all about that. And every week it's something different. It's usually art. It's photography. It's sometimes some science or something critical. Or we get a bunch of smart people in a Google Hangout, and we just see what happens. That's kind of the format.
What do you think? You're a big Google+ user.
Yep.
As was I. I guess I still am. I like Google+, but it seems like Facebook's really kind of more – there's more – going on there. But what did you think of the redesign? Because that shocked me. I opened it up earlier this week and I went, I was on the air and I went literally gasped. It just looks so different.
I like it. I like how every post is constrained inside of this card because there's a lot of stuff. Like, see right there, I reshared your post.
Right.
So it's all constrained and it feels nice and tight with comments underneath and all the plus ones.
This is nice. I like this, that you can see activity on the post as a separate, like, box and then it replaces the comments. I kind of like that.
Right.
What I don't like and a lot of complained about is see all that white space.
It's a very efficient use of white space.
That's ridiculous.
The eye needs rest and it's already so visually busy. They have all these rules everywhere, these little lines, these shaded boxes. You really need some white space, dude.
Really?
I would think so, yes.
It seems like a waste.
You know, actually, there's no more or less white space than before, but now it's just left justified.
But
previously, on the left, it kind of had your circles with a huge gap of white space
right.
underneath,
and
it was and kind of just
centered.
And this
I like, because you can drag. This is really more of a control bar, because you can drag it around. If you don't ever use Hangouts, you could just or something, you could drag it to the More box where things can hide. I usually just hide the games there. So, yeah, there's some advantages to this. I'm not crazy about how much advertising for Google Plus is on Google Plus. You know, if you don't use Hangouts, there seems a lot of space wasted there. But I can, you know, it's Google's to mangle as they choose, I must say. Oh, and I keep screwing this up. I got to fix this. Change cover photo. They have two ways of doing the cover photo now. And I keep checking that box by accident.
Looks like a Leo Laporte impersonator. That
it
picture.
Doesn't. It doesn't. It looks like Jack LaLanne if he were Leo Laporte.
You know, we should all be Leo for Halloween this year.
We need some Leo masks.
That would be a great show.
Yeah, there should be a Leo Halloween kit.
We need a Leo mask.
Yeah, I want to see you in one of those blue jumpsuits.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, let's go. moving right along, I forgot to plug you, John C. Dvorak, looking sharp, by the way. I like it that you're wearing a jacket. Somebody was saying, is he going to wear the stripy yellow shirt again? And
people, you know, that yellow shirt goes back to the Tech TV days.
I know. It's your Kingston
Harry
Trio shirt.
Harry Fuller used to moan about it.
Did he
so
really?
So I wore it all the
is
time.
Is that why you wore it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. You look like you should be a Beach Boy. Or
I look like
Trio.
I should be selling ice cream.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
Google earnings, as long as we're talking about Google. Were announced, or are they going to be announced?
They were announced.
They were announced. And how did they do?
They did fine.
$10
billion in a quarter makes the Instagram acquisition look like something that happened in a baby's sandbox.
$10 billion? Is that profit
or
revenue?
That's revenue, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. They turned a profit.
They turned a
profit. But did you know that 54%, the majority of their income now comes from international waters outside the U.S.? Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to have too much trouble paying that $25,000 fine, I would guess.
I don't know. They're pretty tight. I mean, we don't know what their overhead is like.
The FCC, actually, this is those quite a victory for Google, said, remember the whole Street View car thing where the Wi-Fi, Street View cars were driving around. Mm-hmm. They were looking at open access spots because they were kind of creating a map.
We call this war driving.
Right. It was like Skyhooks does this as a service. In fact, Google wanted to replace Skyhook, where instead of using GPS, they can triangulate you based on access spots in your area. Actually, they don't have to be open, just whatever they can see, any SSID they could see, stronger or weaker. They can tell the strength, and they can roughly say where you are. Google was trying to build its own map using the Street View cars, which are driving around anyway. But unfortunately, on open access spots, Google apparently saved some of the data they were able to see. This first came to light in Germany, where Google actually told people. They stepped up and said, oops, our bad. And fixed it. FCC started investigating, and now they've cleared them of wrongdoing, but they're fining them for not cooperating. $25,000. Man.
That's
rough.
That's the change in the couches at the Google campus.
I don't, why even bother?
No.
Why even bother fining them?
Sergey can find that much in his beard.
Yeah. So, but I think that actually is good news for Google because the FCC agreed with pretty much what everybody's been saying. We've been saying as well, this is an accident. This isn't something they will. You know, what do they want to find out, really, right?
If they don't make money from it, I don't think it's intentional.
You're probably right.
Well, that's not a joke. I really think so.
Do they use that with Google Maps, by the way? Because I noticed when your Wi-Fi is on, it more accurately positions me. And I bet the Google self-driving cars actually might also... They use more than just deep GPS, don't they?
LiDAR they use.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Maybe that... But yeah, yeah. I would hope the self-driving car isn't using Wi-Fi access spots to tell where it is. I would hope they would use something a little more accurate.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. It's just probably not a... You know, I'm somewhere within 50 feet of this.
All right.
Would not be good on a car. The document that the FCC filed was filled with unflattering references to Google. Things like Google only provided 5 documents to the FCC's broad request for information, no email correspondence, nor did it perform a comprehensive review of emails. It didn't identify individuals who might have authorized this. It redacted information, which the FCC said made this useless. Didn't provide an affidavit signed by someone with personal knowledge of the information that was provided to the FCC.
It took five attempts to get the affidavit it wanted, along with several back and forth. This just sounds like the cranky government. Yeah.
Sounds like
they did not cooperate at all.
I don't know, though. I mean, no email correspondence. It sounds like they had the worst intern in the world working on the
That's
FCC
exactly what
issue.
They did.
This is ridiculous.
Hey, Joey, come here. Joey. You're a high school graduate, right? Go ahead. Give them the information.
It sounds like the FCC just trying to save face. They made such a big deal out of this. They had to do something. They couldn't just let it fade off into the sunset.
There you go.
Do you think $250,000 covers the cost of the investigation?
I don't think
$25,000.
$25,000. Oh, never mind. I retract my question.
It barely covers lunch for the commissioners.
That's like the cover letters on all the documents they had to send out.
I think you're right. I think it's face saving.
It's a safe.
We got to spank them somewhere. Mm-hmm. Nokia confirms this has just been snake bit because this Lumia 900. Do you have that? You like that phone? Don't
I
you?
Have the 800.
Yeah, that's right. The 800.
It's the same thing.
The 900 is a little bigger. It's four.
I don't inch. Like bigger.
Like how you say that?
I don't like bigger.
That's what
I don't like bigger. I like the 900, but man, there's just been one problem after another. First of all, they released it on Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure Robert offended you. And
I was in line.
You were the only
Nobody
one.
Nobody was in line.
Nobody was. Now there is a memory management issue with the phone software, so they had to confirm that, offer a fix, and give $100 credit to everybody, whether you had the problem or not.
Oh, that's nice.
That's got to hurt.
Yeah.
If you purchased a Lumia before midnight April 21st, you get your $100 back.
Cool.
But, I mean, that's a good way to handle a PR glitch.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Because it's kind of maybe overdoing
by people.
Yeah. It's way overdoing it.
Yeah.
It's way overdoing it. But when you're trying to make a comeback like Nokia is and like, you know, the Windows mobile phone platform is, $100 per customer isn't too bad.
It really isn't. Yeah, you've got such small market share.
Right.
$100 only amounts to, like a million.
It's a handful of people.
So what do you think of that phone, Leo?
I love it. I think it's a really nice.
I think that phone sucks, and let me tell you why. It's a Zune is the reason.
It's a Zune?
I can't plug it onto my PC and then get a, hey, this is a U. Let me take your photo, take the photos off.
It's a Zune.
Can't do that. You got to load the Zune software, which is non-trivial. On some machines.
I agree.
You load
it doesn't
Zune,
work at all on a
then
Mac.
Then you got to go on the... You got to Zune through a bunch of crap to get a photo off the phone. That stinks.
Yeah. No, you're right.
The Google Android, plug it in. It becomes a USB device. Off comes
both
the photo.
Apple and Android now. You don't even have to plug the machines in at all. But in both cases, when you take pictures, if you set it up this way, Google uploads to Google Plus, and Apple uploads it to iPhone.
See, I think this is all part of Microsoft's brilliant marketing strategy because the Zune is the most annoying thing that you're going to find with this phone. And so when they release 8 and that's all gone, they're getting rid of that interface. It'll be a straight plug into Metro. Everyone will suddenly say, well, this is the phone I was
interesting.
Waiting for.
Do you think this is actually going to happen?
No, not even a little bit.
But are you excited about Windows 8? Because, I mean, I imagine with the enterprise focus, you do a lot of Microsoft stuff.
I do.
It's so consumer-y, though.
That's the biggest concern.
How's business going to take to it?
Business will stay with 7 until 8 is forced on them. And that's always... And there's still businesses
on XP. They might skip
it.
It's possible because every other one's been skipped. It's like a Star Trek movie.
Right.
So 7 has been in, Vista's been bad, and then the first one was okay. And you go right down the line, there's every other one is good. So 8 could be out. It could be the next Vista.
The Wrath of Balmer.
Dance, monkey boy, dance.
I actually like 8, but I'm a consumer, right? Mm-hmm. So
there's just some elements of it that are so My Little Pony, and like you just want to get the big, touchy, flashy, full-screen crap out of the way. Let me get to my computer.
Right. Well, you're a get-down-and-get-to-work
I don't
person.
Even like computers.
I like 8.
She doesn't have a phone if you...
I honestly
I
like
gave
8.
Her a phone, okay. Yeah. I gave her a phone this last time she was here, which was about a month
mother.
Ago.
It was nice.
I had the Ting phone, so I gave it to her.
The Ting?
Yeah, it's ting.com. They were an advertiser.
It's lovely.
And she said I had to charge it, so I stopped using it.
Well, yeah, it seemed like...
Yeah, it's crazy.
So you used it for 8 hours.
Yeah, I used it a few times, and I charged it a few times, and I just didn't use it all that much. But I have it. I brought it back.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I just thought... Your fiancé is going...
Sorry, no.
How do you reach Jolie if you need to reach her?
He yells at me.
He yells
I'm
at
always
her.
Around. Oh, I'm in the kitchen, barefoot.
Okay. Semaphores.
Like you do.
It's nice to be able to text. I'm just saying. No? You don't buy it?
I like being off the grid, man.
This is why I love having Jolie on the show, because she's really John C. Dvorak in a dress.
Have you ever seen
the difference?
Wow.
Is.
Wow, I did not need that image.
I did.
Here are Intel specs for the next big Windows 8 tablet. Jolie O'Dell writing VentureBeat.
Like, boom.
Boom.
Right. Okay.
It's going to have an Atom processor. That's kind of depressing.
Atom.
Clover Trail. Is this a better Atom? I hope.
They're having Atom chips that are more powerful, that can do more, that have higher clock speeds, and still maintain a very low power consumption. Now, will that give you the experience of what you've expected from your laptop? Probably not. Not even
not going to be snappy. Will it compare to the ARM tablets that everybody else is using?
It's getting closer. It's not there yet.
See, that's what you're competing against. I think if you're looking at a tablet, you're not, even though some of these have keyboards there, convertibles, I don't know if you're really competing against the desktop or the laptop. You're competing against iPad, number one, and they're not as snappy.
No.
Well, it's got these things here. They're talking about hyper-threading in burst mode, which I think are ways of compensating for the fact that it's not as snappy by making it temporarily very, very
temporarily
snappy.
Temporarily snappy.
It's like virtually snappy.
Right. That's what Comcast did.
Well, a lot of it also has to do with Apple. They've always, ever since Steve Jobs returned and came up with the first iMac, the first thing you notice was snappy. Because they didn't buffer all the they did buffer.
It was tricky. It was tricksy because it really wasn't snappy. It was just psychologically snappy.
Right. It was very. It felt snappy.
Yeah.
And Apple has been geniuses at doing this, and they've done it all forever. And,
right.
and Microsoft doesn't care. And Android just can't quite get the snappy thing going.
They definitely can't get the snappy.
Well, the iPhone and the iPad are perfect examples of that. One of the things that people love is when you swipe your finger, it's so responsive.
Yes.
Well, the reason why it does that is it's actually a picture that's moving. It's not the actual desktop. On Android,
is that
it is.
Is true, really?
That's true. Mm-hmm. And it's a cheat, but
it works.
It's a great cheat.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. And
so on Android, you're actually moving the actual icons, the actual desktop. That's why it kind of takes a while to redraw it.
Right.
And so Apple brings the snappy.
Of layers of extraction and the fact that consumers don't know or care about
right,
the difference.
Exactly. As you're making that transition, you're not pushing any of the icons. All your mind registers is it's either smooth or it's choppy.
Right. Wow, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So, all right. Well, let's hope Microsoft learns some techniques. I think in XP, didn't XP appear to boot faster than it did? Maybe it was. Because it would draw the screen, even though you couldn't do anything.
Yeah, no, it still does that. You can load it if you boot XP.
You're not done.
It'll be all up there, and then you try to click on stuff. Nothing.
Still loading.
It takes another 5 minutes, and you can finally get it.
They should skip tablets. I think just give up, right? And why don't just go for glasses and try?
Let's talk about the glass.
Google Glass, the best invention ever.
What?
Dumber than a sack of hammers. Now I'm going to get in a fight with the priest.
I will buy them. No. I
will not buy them, but I'm hoping they give them away at Google I.O.
I'm going. I'm hoping.
Oh,
I will be there.
We'll
I will
be buddies.
Fantastic.
Okay, cool.
I don't think they'll be ready.
I'm going to be out.
You know what? No, there was an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Stay with me.
The game?
It helps.
The collar helps, doesn't it? Because women then trust you.
And it just made people hypnotized and stupid. Granted, that was a metaphor, and aliens were involved. But we don't need more computing. We need less computing. This is why I don't have a phone. And putting an overlay on your eyeball, you're just one step away from wetware inside your eyeball.
That's the wrong direction.
And you just need to stop playing games, disconnect, ask people for directions, interact with human beings.
This is a dream world. You know what she's starting to remind me of? Remember that guy
in a dress.
We used to have, besides me in a dress, you remember that guy we used to have on Tech TV, and he was with
Cliff Stoll.
Cliff Stoll. She sounds like Cliff Stoll.
Yeah, whatever happened to Cliff?
He's still around. He's an astronomer.
He's not hooked on anything.
He's an astronomer?
So I talked to my son about this, about the glasses, because I felt the same way that she does and you.
And Trey and I will get them, right?
Yeah, we'll get them.
To millennials? Yeah. This is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread for them. As far as they're concerned, this is the greatest thing they could ever imagine.
John, it's the greatest thing for you, too. Because how many times you walk up to somebody and you forget, have no idea who they are?
That's most of the time.
That's bad manners. The glasses. You say, hey, you. Hey.
No.
Yeah,
nice to see you.
That's what I do.
No, yep. That's the equivalent
that's
of drawing
what you say.
The screen on a tablet.
It's the equivalent of wearing glasses to tell you who people are.
No, because it'll say,
it's just
Robert, how are you? It's great to see you. I haven't seen you since May 17th, it's been really
and
fun.
And they won't see your eye wandering.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll be very insincere. Great to see you again. We haven't seen each other since
I've got the
bit. I can give it to you. I've done it before. I talked
so
about it.
So let's say we're at a conference. I don't know you.
I go up to you. You know me.
I know you, but you don't remember
and then
me.
And I supposedly was met. I say, hey, Leo. And I wouldn't say,
oh, you don't
I say,
know
I say, hey.
Hey,
what are you doing? Who are you working for now? And then I say, let me see your new card.
Oh, so good.
Oh, that's nice.
He's good.
You get the card.
Look at, nice. Ladies and gentlemen.
And
look,
you go, Bruce?
Oh, I forgot how,
I always bring a person along. I'm like, oh, hey, have you met so-and-so? And then the other person has to say
that's
their
harder.
Name. And it is hard. Well, you have to have a person.
A wingman.
Yeah, and you have to have a wingman.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Or you could just have the glasses.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, Trey.
No, you look like a geek with those glasses on, Leo.
As opposed to.
Yeah, what exactly?
Yeah, I think I don't like the idea.
You're going to be the first to get them because Google loves you, Trey.
Well, I'll get them at some point, yes. But the thing is why wouldn't you wear the glasses? Because right now we walk around with our cell phones.
Right.
Why not just
I don't.
Save that. Well, I know, but you're like.
Oh, man,
90.
I love this. I love this.
These guys are giving me a bad time. He's dressing me in a dress for some unknown reason. Yeah. Leo, forget it. It's never going to happen. Yeah. And now he's calling me out as an ageist.
My only concern is these things are not going to work. They don't. You know, Sergey was wearing, Sergey was wearing them at a party. Scoble said, can I wear them? He said, no. It just crashed. All it does right now is crash.
Well, he was running Windows then. Windows.
He said
version.
It reboots constantly. They're never that video. That was pie in the sky. They're never going to get these working. It's
impossible.
Well,
of course they will get them working. That was a little early.
If you can have flexible, transparent screens at CES all over the place, of course you're going to have visual overlays.
Yeah. It'll be simple. It won't be anything complicated.
I want a monocle though. That looks much classier.
I want something steampunk.
How about Pins-nez?
Gonna clink.
Actually, this is a horrible idea, and no one will buy it until it becomes eyeglasses released next year from Apple.
Yeah, that's
then
right.
It'll be the hot
Actually, now, that brings up
a
point.
What you did there.
The architect Philip Stark supposedly is involved in some Apple project that's going to come out just before the end of this year, before Christmas.
A TV?
And no, it won't be a TV because it's going to be the most revolutionary thing the company's ever done. It's got to be glasses.
Amazon's going to make glasses. Apple make glasses.
Wouldn't it be funny?
And Stark has done glasses before. This is the key.
He has. He does great glasses.
Ask your glasses a question.
Yeah. If Apple, I'll be honest, if I had a choice between a Google and an Apple version, wouldn't you buy the Apple version?
People.
Well, it might be a better interface.
Yeah.
But the Google interface is getting better every day. You know, they've got good UI guys.
There's the glasses.
Andy Herzog.
There's the glasses.
Yeah. I bet Andy might be working on something.
So what do you think the Philip Stark thing is, if you think it's a TV? I don't think it's a TV. That couldn't be the most revolutionary thing the company's ever done. It's not that revolutionary. We've been talking about it for 2 years.
You know, one thing people complain about.
Where did you hear this?
It's all over the place. Type in Philip Stark, you know, Stark, the guy, you know what we're talking about.
The internet says so.
It's a BS.
Iron Man story.
Not that
Stark Industries.
Philippe Stark.
Yeah. He says himself, it's a quote from him about this being a revolutionary product. Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
I want
before Christmas.
Like, Geordi wore on Star Trek.
Visor.
Yeah. There we go. That's what I want.
I love
those.
That
are my
visor.
Google glasses.
So you know how this has this little form factor with this tiny little piece of glass above your eye. People said that you won't be able to see that much information on it, but you can see a ton of information on a small piece of glass by your eye
because it's close.
That's what happens with this. This is a very small thing in here, but it looks like a 70-inch screen when it's right up against you, and you can focus on something
don't
very
tap
close
on your
to you.
Oh, am I doing that?
Yes.
Sorry.
you're going to run into left eye,
like
right eye.
It must be right in your
Yes.
It's going right in my ears.
Yeah. Because depending on which eye is dominant, it will make the glasses not work.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, John. Here it is. Patrick May writing in the San Jose Mercury News. When Uber designer Philippe Stark on Friday dropped a juicy hint that he was collaborating with Apple's former CEO Steve Jobs on some top secret but revolutionary project to be unveiled later this year.
You know, if this tech thing doesn't work out,
I could be Colonel Klink. Hogan!
And then you could guest appear in Batman.
Yeah, you saw that.
I saw that.
Wasn't that weird?
That's just strange.
It's so strange.
You were in Batman?
No, they remember the old 1960s Adam West?
Yeah, Powell, Batman? Sokol.
Yeah. So there's a montage on YouTube of all the different pop-in cameos that were made during this show when Adam, you know, Batman and Robin would climb up the sides of buildings, except it's really obvious they're just walking sideways with Adam West. Hunched over Robin in a rather provocative manner, I might add. Yeah. And people would pop out. Sammy Davis Jr. would say, hey, man. And Adam was a citizen. But there's one with Colonel Klink.
Oh, really?
He was big then, though.
Yeah, but it's bizarre really because he's a Nazi.
Yeah. Right, in Germany from World War II.
He's a fun Nazi.
He's a fun Nazi.
And you have Batman saying, be careful, Colonel Klink, they're looking for you. Like, why would you be telling him that?
It's so weird.
It's not very superhero-ish.
No, it's not.
So anyway, so this is the thing that's going to happen, and it's got to be something other than the TV. You don't bring this guy in.
No, you're right.
Apple can do a TV.
Apple says it's not working on anything with Philippe Stark. Now, you know what? I trust John Pachowski of All Things D. That's who says this. So maybe Philippe was just kind of, you know.
Looking for some publicity?
Yeah.
It's possible
he's going to open something very exciting.
I was thinking, I wrote about it. I thought it may be an Apple hotel.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Maybe it was a different Apple.
This was maybe somebody working with the Apple Growers Association of Washington State.
I trust Mr. Stark more than I trust Apple PR.
That's
true.
You know they're going to lie.
They're going to say what's in their best interest, especially if it's in their best interest to keep things secret. Right. So.
Yeah, they're not going to, because they know if they said, well, we're not going to comment on that, that would be a tacit admission.
Absolutely, and journalists know that too.
Yeah. And so do the readers.
Right. We're I mean, you know when you're going to call Apple PR, all they're going to say is either no or no comment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so All Things D reports it as fact.
All Things D.
Well, they reported that Apple said
Apple
it, which
denied
is a
it.
Fact.
Yes. Apple denies all.
Redundant. There's a movie. There's a Steve Jobs movie coming.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher. He's going to play the young Steve Jobs, 1971 through the year 2000. It's an indie movie. Yeah.
Well, we got the first part of the story with Pirates of Silicon Valley, did we not?
I would love to have seen Noah Wiley come back.
Yeah.
He was a good Steve Jobs. He looked just like
him. But he doesn't look like him now. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, he doesn't?
Well, that was, 20 years ago or something. Mm. We've all aged a little bit, John. Not you. You look exactly the same. Actually, he does. It's very weird. It's kind of uncanny.
But it's nice that you'd say so after humiliating me over and over again earlier in the show.
But what? By dressing you in a dress?
Well, you didn't manage to do
be
it.
A nice dress. Not going to be like some plain Jane thing.
Yeah.
Well, what's nice when you said
it? Could be a gown. Would you prefer
this
that?
This will get bad very
a
quickly.
A gown.
The movie title's called. Oh, this is not good. Jobs: Get Inspired.
Ew.
No, that's bullcrap. Oh. That can't be the name.
That must
of
be
it.
A working title.
According to Ashton Kutcher and producer Mark Hume.
You don't think Ashton Kutcher's punking everybody with this bull crap?
This could be an elaborate episode.
There's no iPod because it came out a year later. In fact, it just gets Jobs back at Apple. It's really the early Apple that he's going
to do. This is a punk job.
You think it's made up?
Yeah.
I think it might be wishful thinking. I think the tech community has a certain amount of anger toward Mr. Kutcher, and I think the entertainment industry is beginning to feel the same way about him.
How interesting. Really?
Well, no, because, I was at the Tech Founders Gala thingy, whatever, with Mr. Fancy Pants, Rich Tech Guys, and they had a Mr. Fancy Pants Entertainment guy there as well, one of the guys from Big Bang Theory, and he got up and said, you know, that we have something in common. We all hate Ashton Kutcher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Poor Ashton. So, what did he do to deserve that?
Well, he came around and started investing in companies and trying to make geekdom a cool guy thing, and I think all the geeks resented that. Mm-hmm.
This is John C. Dvorak in 19, I think, 85. See, he looks exactly.
If I had those big giant glasses, which I do. The Tech Grouch works.
Kidding. The Tech Grouch is wearing those glasses?
Yeah, those glasses.
Wow. That's Gary Kildall, who's the late Gary Kildall, founder of DRDOS, Digital Research. And is a handsome.
Look at those glasses.
That's like two Hubble telescopes in orbit rendering.
That was like this. That was that era when those glasses were in vogue.
Aviator glasses. Yeah.
So I think this is the
you
one where
pretty young.
My
tear
mom
open
had those
the thing.
Glasses.
Yeah. You look pretty young, actually. You look pretty good in that.
I've only made these shows. They put us on once. You do something kind of goofy.
It lives
you're
forever.
Done. Yeah, but you don't get on the show.
Look at
again.
The computer.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
State of the art PC Junior.
You're a little bit like a groovy 70s Scoble.
That's a PS2?
Yeah. Oh. He looks a little bit like that. That's a mean thing to say.
Well, you guys are just being mean
today. We are really beating up on John. Please, let's be nice to John.
I got
be nice.
Back,
go to
John.
noagendashow.com.
Give him one of your buns.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Cheer him up.
Okay.
No, seriously. Did you have any of her buns? They're really good.
I've had her buns, yeah. They're over there.
But I mean, did you? No, today, though. You had these? Did you have one? Did you have a bite?
Hello.
Because they're really weird.
They're much better when they're hot.
I'm surprised that there's any left.
I'm never bringing you baked goods again.
No, I'm not.
You shouldn't.
No.
You know,
I am not saying anything
wrong. Lie from her the last
you
time.
You all have dirty minds. I am not saying I'm...
Will you please absolve us, Father?
Father, forgive
mostly
me, Father.
Him.
Yeah, you got
I'm
a priest.
I'm good.
You have more than just me. I have to bring
I'm
in a thing
here, and you're just doing nothing but yeah. innuendo.
Yeah,
because
that's not
you're,
innuendo. Yeah,
this is a no, version of you flirting with Jolie.
Yeah, it's sort of a single entendre, really. Yeah.
Would you like a little bit of Jolie's fruit? How about that? We're going to talk about CISPA, which is the SOPA replacement. They will not give up. You said this, John. You said it's not over yet. We've defeated SOPA, but they will be back. We will talk about CISPA, which used to stand for the California Independent Internet Service Providers Association.
But that's a long call.
It stands for something else now.
Cute.
But right now, let's talk about Audible.com. For all the conversations we had about looking and seeing, I have to say... When I listen to a book at Audible.com, it's visual for me.
I'm
with
you there.
Don't you think?
I love Audible.
You know what my next book is?
I hope I know what it is.
You do know what it is because you told me you wouldn't be my friend unless I listened to it.
I'll clarify. I said you can level up as my friend if you read this book.
What
right now you're sort of at a low level. The book.
What's the name of the book?
Oh, I'm hurt.
The book
is The King Killer Chronicles.
It's called The Name of the Wind.
Okay.
By Patrick Rothfuss.
Sounds great.
Now, I'll be honest with you. This is my... Look, John left. He just walked away. Everybody walked away. What is out there? There must be something out there. Go ahead. Yeah. I'll see you
no,
later.
No, I'll stay with you.
Stick, would you? Because
no, I love Audible.
I want to talk about this because this is my next book. I've downloaded it. Actually, I just finished book two of the Clash of Kings.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go right into the Patrick Rothfuss because I felt like it might be similar enough that I might get a little confused. So I'm reading...
You won't get confused. It's a much simpler
it's kind of
set
a sword and sorcery or no?
You know... The George R. R. Martin have so many characters.
Oh, I know. It's very complex.
And there's long gaps between action of the character. I mean,
right.
R. R. Martin is fantastic.
Right.
This is a different line of story. You'll be able to keep this compartmentalized in your labyrinthal brain.
Okay.
Okay.
What I did, and I often will do this, it's kind of an amuse-bouche, an in-between, a little sherbet, a little sorbet to cleanse the palate after the George R. R. Martin and before the Patrick Rothfuss. I'm listening to a wonderful novel by the woman who wrote Bel Canto. It's, now I can't remember it, but it's, well, you know what? All I have to do is go to my library. One of the great things about Audible is, I've been an Audible member since 2000. Any book you've ever bought is in your library forever. You can download it anytime. So there's The Name of the Wind. There's The Stand. I'm going to read that soon. There's Mackenzie Phillips, High on Arrival. That was supposed to be an amuse-bouche, but The Marriage Plot. No, I read that. State of Wonder, that's it, by Ann Patchett. This is actually a great novel. I'm really enjoying it, but it's a quick thing. It's just a 12-hour novel, so I'm going to listen to that. And then The Name of the Wind is next.
Yep. And then The Alchemist.
Yeah, Patrick Coelho. Well, I've read that. That's a wonderful book.
Okay, you know.
Does that level me up if I've read that?
Yeah.
Before I even met you, I read that.
Yeah, okay.
That's
yeah.
famous.
Yeah.
I have that in Audible. I have that in a book form. I have that in a comic book, everything.
Comic book?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think. I'd
yeah,
be thinking
Audible
about something
is
else.
Greatness. I was listening to Audible on the way here today.
What were you listening to?
Brushwood got me the full, complete list of the Dark Tower series.
Oh, man. That will take you forever.
That's what he said, but he said it's a path I have to go down.
It is. It is a path. It is.
It's such a good series.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Now, have you gotten to the lobster things yet that go snackety snack or whatever? Because that's really bad for a while. There's a little bit of a...
No.
Yeah, when you get there, just remember, it gets better.
Okay.
The Dark Tower is good, and there's a new one coming out in a week.
Shut the front door, really?
Yeah. I wouldn't kid you on something like that, Jolie O'Dell. Yes, Stephen King wrote a new one. So there's another thing. Now, I don't want you to wait. So here's the deal. You are going to get two credits. So actually, you could get Patrick Rothfuss, The Name of the Wind.
Mm.
That's one credit. And then wait for Stephen King's next. But wait a minute. That would only be if you've read every other. There's like seven others before this.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you should really wait. I love those, too. The new one, and actually Audible has... A whole thing going on about it too is coming out on the 24th. It will win the here it is win the new Stephen King novel right there in the corner. This is the next one in the Dark Tower series.
It is going to be called The Wind Through the Keyhole. More wind. Hmm. And it will be out April 24th. So this will be one of the books that you can get as well. It's pretty exciting. Audible is about 100,000 books, all audio, read by the best people. Oh, look, if baseball, you know, if baseball is Jim Bouton's Ball 4 just came out, that's great. What a great book that is. Not for the kiddies, but a very, you know, this was the one that the baseball, Major League Baseball hated. So many good choices. But let's go with the Rothfuss. Patrick, Rothfuss, The Name of the Wind. This could be one of your free books. All you have to do is go. Actually, you can get one and two. Is two as good as one?
Yes.
Is there going to be a third? How many are there going to be?
There will be a third. He's writing it right now.
Okay, see, so I'm going to slow down a little bit because I hate it when you get to two. It's like falling off a cliff and now you have to wait.
Yourself.
Really?
Eat dessert first.
Don't. There's a guy at Candlestick Park used to say, he was selling hot fudgesicles. He said, don't deny yourself the pleasure.
Yeah.
It's like that. Yeah. Right? Just don't deny yourself the pleasure. Yeah. The name of the one. Here, let's listen to a little bit of Nick Podal reading The Name of the Wind.
The lights on the wall were burning blue. Graham, Jake, and Shep nodded to themselves. The three friends had grown up together, listening to Cobb's stories and ignoring his advice.
Now, that's interesting. He's got a younger voice. Is the protagonist a younger guy in this?
Yeah, it's a young guy.
They do that in Audible.
Yeah, that voice actor is great. I mean, he
confuses
the words with his own ideas, and that guy is amazing.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Audible.com. Here's what you do. Go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month. That's what I have. That's what I do. And your first month is free. Your first two books are free. You can cancel at any time. Those books are yours to keep forever and ever and ever. Audible.com/twit2 plays on everything. Your iPod, iPhone, iPad, Zoom, Kindle.
Zoom. Why'd you point to me when you said
Zoom.
That?
It also works on GPS
devices.
You have
the only one.
I actually, you know what? I have a Zoom. I have the Zoom HD. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Would you like it?
Yeah.
Really? What would you do with it?
Put it in the museum.
I have a little museum in there.
I know. You got a great little museum.
I love my museum. I'm proud of that. So, okay. So we fought. We won. We beat SOPA. But now there's CISPA, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, H.R. 3523. It's up for a vote in 2 weeks. It has the support of AT&T, Facebook, IBM, Intel, Microsoft, Oracle, Symantec, Verizon, and many more. Mike Rogers of Michigan says it's nothing like SOPA.
No.
So it's, how could it be bad with all the Facebook likes it?
Oh.
CISPA's primary function? To remove legal barriers that might keep internet companies from giving all of your communications and information to the government. See, those privacy laws, they just slow down the investigations. Cyber entities such as internet service providers, social networks like Facebook, cell phone companies at AT&T can ignore internet privacy laws as long as Homeland Security asks them to.
But isn't this a bit ridiculous? All of those people have spy guides anyway. That
they want
more spy guides. They already cooperate pretty damn fully with requests for information, warrants, etc. I don't think we need more of that. That already exists.
But this keeps them from getting a black eye when inevitably they find out how
they're
much
indemnified.
Data
they're indemnified. They're indemnified. Critics like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, CDT, say CISPA's crazily vague wording. I'm reading the story by Violet Blue, by the way, from CNET.com. We love Violet. CISPA's crazily vague wording makes it possible for the U.S. government to take extreme measures against sites like the Pirate Bay and WikiLeaks, and could even extend to sites that publish WikiLeaks-like information, such as, I don't know, the New York Times, the UK Guardian, these newspapers, this whole Pentagon Papers thing. We've not liked it ever since. Rogers, by the way, is one of the guys who went after Peyton Manning. Bradley Manning. He went after Bradley Manning, the private who gave all those all that stuff to WikiLeaks. Hmm. CISPA's co-author, Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland, he has staged a conference called Influence Tech Reporters
whom he called cyber media and cyber bloggers. He's in touch.
Cyber bloggers?
He speaks the lingo of the young folk.
Yeah, cyber like 12, bloggers. 15 years ago, sure.
You're cyber media.
Can I put that on my business card? I'm a cyber blogger.
Does it say that on your card? It
no,
should.
It's going to, should. Though. Oh, yes, it is.
It's nothing okay, like so
regardless
sopa.
Of the out-of-touchness, I don't know.
It'll be hard to motivate the same sort of resistance to CISPA as we had with SOPA, because the big thing on SOPA, the thing that people could latch on to, was the fact that they were legislating a really bad tech.
Right.
A really bad tech idea.
And if that's how you got the 83 engineers who invented the internet writing against it.
Exactly.
This is more benign.
This is much more benign until you look, as you mentioned, the really vague wording of, yeah, we can take action against anything that might be a threat. Okay, what exactly does that mean?
Basically, it indemnifies. So let's say Facebook is asked by the Homeland Security to give them completely unrestricted access to your information.
They often are, and they will, and they do.
Well, now it's completely okay.
Well, it was completely okay before. And they disclose that they do that, and they give annual reports on the information that they get and the warrants they comply with. It's either redundant or it's a complete trick to make something else legal that they're
maybe,
not making
it, maybe that's
use
why it's
cases
so vague.
For
it
right
could be
now.
A stepping stone the government wants just to have full all access all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
there
the
is,
API
you know,
is open to the government.
These courts keep coming up with things like, you know, Fifth Amendment protections, or right against unreasonable search and seizure. They keep coming up with that silly constitutional law stuff. So let's just enshrine this in a law that says, hey, basically the U.S. government can look at any online communication as long as there's reason to suspect, and they use this phrase, cybercrime or a threat of intellectual property theft. Wait a minute.
Intellectual
Did you hear that
property
one?
Theft, yeah.
Or
this is a
A threat
law?
Of intellectual property theft. The bill defines cybersecurity systems and cyber threat information as anything related to protecting networks from A, efforts to degrade, disrupt, or destroy such systems or networks, or B, theft or misappropriation of private.
Well, DHS already shuts down websites whenever they feel like it. You know, they shut down torrenting websites. They shut down whole slate of them a couple years ago, and people started freaking out, like, why is Homeland Security taking down this website and putting up the government seal?
It just scares me that
I don't know why they think they need another law to do what they've been doing.
IP theft with terrorism. That's what really scares me.
So what you're saying is that essentially the government can float around and then one day just shut down
anybody, me,
you, and you're done
because of IP theft. Because, you know, maybe we had a clip from YouTube or something on our
show. Yeah, John's going to go after you for that clip that you had up just now.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually, that clip that I just played would be enough for them to do that
if they wanted to.
If Stuart Chaffee decided he didn't like me,
whatever happened to him anyway?
He's still around. In fact, people keep saying I should get him on one of our shows. He's like living in New England.
Why don't you get him on one of your shows?
I should.
When he's in the Bay Area. When he's in the
Bay Area. He's in Vermont or somewhere. Oh. The EFF has an online tool where you can, of course, contact your representative and say, I don't like this. But you're right, Robert. I don't think we're going to see this massive upswelling, even though, frankly, you may say, Jolie, oh, they're already doing all that, which is true.
You can only get people worked up about litigation
once,
and privacy once
apparently.
A year,
yeah.
Maybe once every 2 years.
Yeah, you keep hounding them with more and more. You kill this one, another one.
Right.
This is like a prostitution in Hollywood.
Or whack-a-mole in my...
Same thing.
In my,
There's also a sort of an inside-the-beltway mentality here that people have to take into account. And that is, D.C., you know, where I live, it's filled with lobbyists. It's filled with offices that have people who do this all day. And so they just received a big smackdown from SOPA. They want something to justify their jobs. And so, of course, they're going to be reaching out to the legislators that are friendly, and they're going to say, well, here's something else. It's not quite SOPA, but it is something we could put in our win column.
And if they can't, they get screwed on this deal, eventually they're going to fall back on the old. It's going to show up as an anti-child porn law that's got nothing to do with child pornography, but it's got all – this is basically the same stuff. They just have all the stuff in there. They're ready at the.
It'll get snuck into an appropriations bill. That's
they're
how it works.
That's how
they
do
eventually.
Finish the job. You might as well just give up, Leo. You're doomed.
Here's one thing I'm not going to do: publish pictures of my loved one's breasts. That's how Higinio O. Ochoa, 30-year-old hacker and Linux administrator from Galveston, Texas, got arrested by the FBI.
Why?
He hacked into several websites belonging to law enforcement. Usually a bad idea.
I wouldn't advise it.
Was he doing it in a gray hat way or a white hat way?
It was
black hat.
Black hat. And
what was he doing?
He left a calling card, which was he used a Twitter account to direct people to a website where all the law enforcement information he'd hacked was on display. Also on that website was a picture of a woman, his girlfriend apparently.
With hackers?
Yeah, with a sign that said, "Pwned by Wormer and Cabin Crew, heart you bitches." I won't show you the picture. Well, I'll show you the picture, Jolie, because you've seen these before. But it, not, you can't see it,
what
John.
What does that mean?
So
she's seen these before.
Well,
she has cable.
She has cable.
I don't,
so,
actually. But I have the internet.
Do not look.
So.
But what's weird is, foolishly, he took the picture with an iPhone and left the GPS information in the image.
Well, what kind of a hacker is this guy?
Noob.
Oh boy. So
then what happened?
So they arrested him.
Well, not because of the breasts.
No, they found him because of the breasts.
They used breast recognition techniques.
They found him because of the...
I think that would
they
be
did.
Interesting in the glasses.
That's that's built into the Google glasses.
Yeah.
body part recognition.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Blinking fake.
I got an email from the guys behind this Kickstarter project, and they said, "We'd love it if you'd publicize it." I don't know why.
Oh, another one?
That is awesome.
I don't know why.
Okay, girl, no. The Nano Watch was a thing, like when the Nano came out. That was a Kickstarter project, and it was kind of unique. And now this is like the third.
Okay, but you do want these watches.
This week.
These are e-ink watches. Okay, not
I
regular.
Don't want this
you
watch.
Can actually buy. Somebody makes e-ink watches already, but this guy wants to make e-ink watches. You know, with the kind of screen that you have on the Kindle, for instance.
So you're gonna do this?
Well, wait a minute. Look at this. They wanted $100,000 gold. They've raised $2.8 million in 2 days.
Well, a sucker's born every day.
No kidding. You passed the Jobs Act, and look at this.
Yeah, they got the dream team there.
I like this because I don't think that only Apple users should look incredibly geeky walking around with this little Nano watches. I want something for Android. I mean, really, come on. Let's be fair.
What is that?
Why a
Nano?
This is one of those Nano watches.
It's really funny. Let's that see. Was a, that
it
was the
like
Kickstarter project.
Them
but they only raised
them.
Like $30,000 or something for this. They've got $2.8 million for these e-ink watches.
$2.8 million for.
It's a nice watch.
Look at him. That's beautiful. That's Helvetica. You can't go wrong with Helvetica.
Wow.
Oh, it's not Helvetica. Cool?
Yeah.
Outdoor readable display.
It's very geeky, by the way.
I think most wristwatches are geeky.
It's a watch. Cool.
Most wristwatches you can read outdoors, I believe. I may be wrong on that. But
Kickstarter's awesome.
Yeah, but I think there may be a irrational exuberance on Kickstarter now.
I don't know. I mean, if you want it, just...
I guess everybody...
If you think it's cool...
Everybody who's pledged
in your life,
wants the watch.
My
if you pledge $99, you get one. You get a watch, jet black. $115, you get a watch and free shipping.
What?
Not exactly free, kind
that
of free.
That doesn't sound right.
$125, you get a watch in any color, but free shipping to the U.S.
And there's a whole generation saying, what's a watch?
Yeah,
what's
no kidding.
Watch? So what is this?
I don't know, but that looks...
It's a Buddha, Buddha and a Lucky.
Don't drink it, because Tony went.
No, I'm not going
upset.
To drink it, because it's Lucky. I'm going to drink
Montiado.
It anyway.
Mm.
So I just want to point out that you can, in fact, already buy e-ink watches. There's a lot of them. Probably Philippe Stark designed e-ink watches.
Yeah,
Phosphor has made one for a long time that looks oddly similar to the one they just raised $2.3 million
to make. It looks exactly the same from the picture I saw.
Yeah, isn't that odd?
Can you start up a Kickstarter for something you've already made?
I don't know. We tried to, you know, apparently. We wanted to do Kickstarter for the bricks. I'm just jealous because they said no. They said you can't. I don't know why. They don't like us.
Don't you think Kickstarter has some obligation to make sure that the products that they're endorsing and allowing to be funded on their platform aren't, you know, blatant IP violations and knockoffs and crap?
If you become the funding mechanism for some sort of IP theft, then yeah, you do have a responsibility.
Yeah.
I would not consider this not IP theft. I mean, I'm no expert.
I'm going to wrap this up with a 9-year-old boy named Kane Monroy who wanted an arcade.
This is wonderful.
This is cute.
He built one in his dad's used auto parts store out of cardboard.
My name is Kane. I'm 9 years old. My arcade is called Kane's Arcade. It's open on weekends only.
This is at canesarcade.com. He loves tickets. C-A-I-N-E-S. It's all made out of cardboard boxes. Now, I got to say, there's probably kids have been doing this from time immemorial. But thanks to the internet and Vimeo,
yeah, we can
all... We can all share in Canes.
Well, you jump to 255.
255 in?
There, yeah, 255 to 330 is... Oh, you can't jump ahead on Vimeo. You have to let it buffer up a little bit.
Yeah, I have to get it
caught. We're almost there. And it kept them out of
my hair all summer. It's pretty cute. 9 years old. He's got the tape gun. He's taping up the cardboard.
At 9 years, the only good tech is a cardboard box.
He's actually pretty good. He's got Army Men and...
That's true. That's
going to
influence my parenting.
Dad knows how to pull focus.
Yeah, he's got a little f2.8 lens on there.
Yeah. I'll give it a 4-star
hard game, challenging game. You know what the chat room is, right? He could never get away with that if his family had a cat. Tells me,
Dad. That's yes. A claw machine.
Cats own all boxes.
So you got an S hook. Put a piece of yarn.
You mean
on
a claw machine.
And then put a little track on top of the box. And I said,
This 9-year-old's going somewhere.
Now watch this thing with the calculators right after this.
With a string and a hook.
And here's some sunglasses. These are the glasses I like the most.
Google glasses.
Star sunglasses.
This kid will be working at Google in about 10 years. Look at all the calculators.
To put on every arcade game. And I go, what's that for?
The calculators are here for security to see if it's a real
watch.
Or not. On the back, the FunFest has security number. So when you go here, you have to turn it on and put the PIN number in it. And you push a check mark button, and the big number comes out.
He's just a square root.
The check mark button.
Okay, there's some sort of weird genius going on here.
That's actually better than a lot of network security out there.
That is just a great story. You can read more about it at Canes, or actually watch the video, canesarcade.com. Robert, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for being here. This was kind of spontaneous. You were just driving up anyway to visit.
Right, right.
And I thought, let's get this guy on.
Well, I was hoping that I could get this liquipelled.
You know what? I think the truth of liquipelled is it doesn't really matter one way or the other. Dunk it if you want to. Yeah. That's really the rule of thumb. You can find out more about Robert and his work at TheTechGeek. What is it?
TheTechStop.net.
TheTechStop.net. TheTechStop.net. He's at Padre SJ, both on Twitter and in our chat room, Padre SJ. It's really great to have you. And we're going to talk because I want to do an enterprise show. Fantastic. Oh, you have My Little Pony as your desktop.
I do.
I'm not talking about Father.
I've got ponies on
Father
mine too.
Robert.
I
oh,
did
you
that
do.
To
okay.
Screw with my coworkers.
Jolie O'Dell has My Little Pony time. Desktop. It's so nice to have you. Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing those delicious panofri with the little cream cheese. That was so good.
I'm happy that you like it.
Really
that.
Delish. Really delish. Trey Ratcliffe is getting out and about. You were at the EG conference speaking. Are we going to be... This is like the TED conference, right?
Yeah, it's like the TED conference. They bring in entertainers and designers and artists, and it's 3 days of short little talks, just like TED. And it was great. It's really inspirational. They get a lot of unique people that no one's ever heard of in there, and it's just a wonderful, inspirational weekend. They put all their videos up.
I was going to ask. So I can see your talk on the EG site?
It'll be up soon. My talk from last year is up there. It's about, you know, how do you become an artist on the internet? How and why do you share your stuff?
Oh,
that's neat. How can you kind of find yourself in today's world? And that was my talk last time. This time it was all new stuff.
Wow. Lots of great people, too. There's Adam Savage.
Neil Stevenson gave a talk.
You had dinner with Neil Stevenson. I'm kind of jealous here.
Yeah, that guy's cool.
Oh, yeah, is he cool? He's the king. There's another great Audible recommendation. I presume you've read all of it or listened to all of his books.
Not all of them. He's got a lot of books.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't even listened to all of them.
I loved, you know, Snow Crash.
Cryptonomicon, Snow Crash.
Diamond Age is great, too.
Yep. Yeah. I actually loved Anathema. I don't think a lot of people didn't. I wasn't crazy about Rimdi, his new one, but hey, to each his own. Oh, Marco Tempest is fun. Yeah. He's cyber illusionist.
He did all kinds of new stuff.
Oh, he does great stuff. So that is the-eg.com, and you can find Trey's speech there at some point. Yeah. And then stuckincustoms.com is your website, the app. There's several. There's the stuckintheworld.com.
Stuck on Earth.
Stuck on Earth, that's it, .com.
I'm sorry, Stuck on Earth, the app.
The app. And then there's, of course, 100 cameras in one.
100 or cameras in one.
And you're leaving for New Zealand like soon.
Yeah, like in about a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are we going to see it all?
I'm still on the internet.
But I know, but are you going to come up
here? Of course.
It's a long flight.
I'll come back a lot.
I feel like we're losing you.
No.
Okay, well, give me a nose rub, because that's what the Maori do.
Oh,
there we go.
That is a first for Twit.
I don't know. I'm beginning skeptical now about this.
I'm, by the way, told that you have I didn't know this. You have an app for Google TV. Is that true?
Yeah, we have an app on Google TV.
What's that?
It's called Photo Voyages with Trey Ratcliffe.
I didn't even know that. I have a Google TV at home.
It's also on Roku.
Oh, okay.
It just came out for iOS, too. Yeah, it's all
I will look for it. It's called again?
It's called Photo Voyages.
Photo Voyages. Trey Ratcliffe.
I'd also like to plug the No Agenda show.
Good man.
Episode 400 was this week.
Is that
when
right?
When are you going to have him on No Agenda? Do you have guests on No Agenda?
Never.
It's just you and Adam.
Think about the reasons. Gassing. You know, essentially.
Yeah.
But it's like, over the years, you know, I've done these shows. There's booking issues. People don't show up.
It's so much easier. Forget guests. Yeah.
And the worst part is people pestering you about being a guest.
I know. I hate that. I have this priest who keeps asking me if he...
I know, he's here.
Weird, weird.
Guy shows
always
up.
Always in the chat room going, Leo.
Leo.
It's another priest, not you.
not you. It's that other guy.
I want to tell you, this guy's the best.
I agree. Trey Ratcliffe, I agree.
Oh, yeah. The guy's unbelievable.
I love Trey. We all love... Everybody loves Trey.
It's the exchange for the plug.
Oh, okay.
A little vlog rolling here.
NoAgendaShow.com, channeldvorak.com, @TheRealDvorak on Twitter.
@TheRealDvorak, I need some more people. You know what I'm thinking of doing?
What are you thinking of
doing? I'm thinking of getting on, you know, there's this train museum in Sacramento.
Yes.
I'm thinking of doing a tweet up on the train to go to Sacramento to visit the train museum to take pictures.
I'll go.
And we'll just load up the train with people. Then pick up, you know, all
Has anybody ever done a photo walk on a train? It could be a train walk.
Yeah, you get you can get on the train anywhere from San Jose all the way up to Sacramento and you do a tweet up. And then when you get there, you have a little event.
Let's do it. I'll do it with you.
Okay.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, then
we'd
get double the number of people.
Well, at least 30% more.
No, probably double. And then get Jolie to come. We'll pack them in, but she's not going to do it.
Come on.
Would you ride a train?
She doesn't even care.
Train's kind of 19th century.
I've ridden trains before. They're kind of disgusting and slow.
There you go.
Wow.
That's that.
Sorry, I hate to rob you of your romantic illusions about trains.
The only thing that was bad is that when she said disgusting and slow, she like really looked at me.
Yeah. Disgusting and slow.
Yeah.
I thought she was looking back and forth between you two.
Yeah.
No, she was
disgusting
pretty much,
and slow.
She was staring right at Leo.
I would like to thank you all for joining us. Invite you. Oh, wait a minute. We can't go anywhere. Tom Merritt's here with a look at the week ahead, Tom.
No way. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's some of the stories coming up in the next week we'll be keeping an eye on for Tech News Today. Monday, April 16th, Oracle's patent and copyright suit against Google is set to start. You can take your discs into Walmart that day and have them converted into ultraviolet copies.
What?
And Yahoo and IBM have their earnings. Tuesday, April 17th is the anniversary of FTP, first being proposed in 1971 by Abhay Busan. Demo kicks off on Tuesday, as does Ad Age Digital. Wednesday, April 18th, the Spotify press briefing happens in New York City. Fast Company Innovation Uncensored, also happening in New York. And T-Mobile is holding their HTC One S launch party. Finally, Thursday, April 19th, Microsoft announces their quarterly earnings. All that and more we'll be keeping an eye on Tech News Today next week. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom Merritt. Watch Tech News Today, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on the Twit Network, twit.tv. And if you miss a show, don't worry. We've got audio and video available always after the fact at twit.tv. We do this show Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific. I hope you'll tune in live. We like to have the live chat room to get the feedback. We talk. We're actually going to start using a new service called On the Air to take calls and stuff if you'd like to do
that.
What? Yeah, I think it'd be kind of fun. What do you think? No?
Anarchy.
Yeah, maybe anarchy will ensue.
I'm surprised you haven't done that before, actually.
I've been wanting to do it, but the technology really wasn't there. Somebody's created a new thing that we used on last night, and it worked great. That allowed us to take calls. So we're going to try to start doing that.
How are the callers? Were they?
Most of them were wearing pants. Most of them. Anyway, that'll be a lot of fun, and I hope you'll tune in, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Eileen Rivera, our producer. Thanks to all of you for being here. We'll see you next week. Don't forget, our NAB coverage starts bright and early Monday morning, tomorrow morning.
9 a.m.
9 a.m.
9 a.m. Pacific.
9 a.m. Pacific. And we'll be all day at the National Association of Broadcasters show.
You're going to be
Monday,
giving
Tuesday,
a talk.
Wednesday, Thursday. And, I'm really excited.
What day?
Tuesday night, we're doing Broadcast Minds, the new tech talk with Kevin Pollak of the Kevin Pollak Chat Show and a bunch of other people talking about the future of television. I think you'd be interested in this.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. You can still get, I think, tickets if you go to newtech.com/digitalminds, N-E-W-T-E-K.com.
Oh, say hi to Kiki.
Kiki will be there. Kiki Stockhammer. Love her. She was the video toaster demo woman.
Yes.
Yeah, amazing.
Still kind of.
She still does it.
Which
she's
the best demo person
ever.
She's
amazing. Let's see, what else?
That starts at 6:30. We'll be streaming on Tuesday.
We do have passes. If you're in Vegas in the next few days, if you go to twit.tv, at the bottom we've got a banner that you can get a free pass to the NAB show with the word twit as the coupon code, and $100 off if you want the conference pass with twit100. And do get a pass, because if you're in the area, I'd love you to come by. We're in the South Hall, first floor, just to the left as you come in the door, and we'd love to say hello to everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Another twit is in the can.
This is amazing.